Hello. Start
Yeah.
the video.
This meeting is being recorded.
This meeting is being recorded. We're going to go ahead and get underway with our regular meeting.
True. I
This
didn't.
San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board. We have many people tuning in today. You will notice visitors that your own video is going off, and that's just so we can manage the board and staff who will be working with today. During closed session, we discussed three matters of anticipated litigation, and we had a conference with our labor negotiators. We did vote on one matter having to do with anticipated litigation, and that vote there was a motion made by Chris Unger and a second by Marilyn Roger to accept the agreement. And those present were Mark Buckman, Chris Unger, Marilyn Roger, and me, and we all voted in favor of that. Is there anyone who would like to address the board with anything having to do with closed session items?
Maybe get the steps on how to indicate to us real quick.
And if you want to, you can, to, if there is, if you, when you have, well, I'll get to public comment just a minute. Okay, so I just heard, no. Okay. So, is there consensus on the order of business?
I have a couple of questions on the order of business.
All right, Mr. Millar.
So are we approving the 2021 budget at this meeting, notwithstanding all the unknowns that we have, or is this a preliminary discussion of it?
We are, this is an action item.
Okay. Let's see, what was the other thing on here? Okay, I'm sitting here in Green River, Utah, which I don't recommend, notwithstanding my background shot. It's 95 degrees out there, and I've got a human being and a 16-year-old dachshund. So I am going to sign off. Otherwise, we have to sit here because there's insufficient Verizon signal for me to participate. So Godspeed. And Evelyn, thank you for your voicemail. You worry for naught. Not just because I'm not going to be in the meeting, but you worry for naught. So you're fabulous. Unless there's some strenuous objections to that, I'm gonna have to hit the road.
Be safe, Walt.
Thank you all. See
you. Be safe. Drive safely. We'll miss you.
See you June 8th, right?
Yes.
Okay. I'll be stationary.
All right.
All right. Bye, everybody. Thank you. I appreciate you all handling this.
All right. Any other discussion on the consensus of this, on the order of business? All right. We will move on to the approval of the minutes from the meeting of May 19. Any discussion, revisions, comments? Hearing none, I would appreciate a motion. And please remember to, you are, everyone's muted right now, so you can be in charge of your own unmuting. If someone could please make a motion about the minutes of the May 19 meeting.
I move approval of the minutes of May 19th.
Thank you.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by Ms. Frame. I will do a roll call vote as we are becoming accustomed. Mr. Unger.
Yes.
Ms. Frame.
Yes.
Mr. Buckman. Yes. Ms. Roger. Yes. Dr. Eisenbeth Rogers. Okay. And me, yes. So thank you. All right. Next we have, do we have any other student representatives here today? and it does not look as though we do. All right. We will wish them all the best. I know they've been wonderful. We've really appreciated all their input throughout the year. We let them know that, and but we will look forward to meeting our new representatives for next year. All right, next is our retiree recognition. So I believe Kristen Lewin is going to take that from at this point. Am I correct?
I am. Can you hear me? So today we celebrate over 20 employees who will be entering the next phase of their lives. In the words of Fred Rogers, often when you think you're at the end of something, you're really at the beginning of something else. A thriving new beginning can be and should be a time for amazing engagement, growth, connections, contributions, and amazing possibilities. Retirement is wonderful if you have two essentials, much to live on and much to live for. So we have compiled a slideshow created from pictures given to us from our soon-to-be retirees, showing exactly how much they have to live on and to live for. So Mandy's going to show the slideshow and then give the floor back to me again.
Sometimes you bend, sometimes you stand, sometimes you turn your back to the wind. There's a world outside every darkened door, where blues won't haunt you anymore. Where the brave are free and lovers soar, come ride with me to the distant shore. He won't hesitate to break down the garden gate. There's not much time left today, yeah. And all these times it's in my blood.
Thank you so much.
Okay. At this point in time, I want to thank Alisa and all of our retirees for putting that together. At this point in the meeting, we would normally go and shake each other's hands and give each other flowers and enjoy cake together and all of that. So instead, we had to get creative. And if I could just share my screen here with you, Mandy, hopefully you've given me thank you so much. I would like to show you how we got creative in human resources to deliver gifts to our retirees. So every retiree was given a bottle of sparkling cider. That is not champagne. That is sparkling cider. Two plastic champagne glasses and some bubbles. So as I show these photos, I want all of our retirees to get ready with their glass of sparkling cider and their bubbles. And I'm going to show you what our staff did over the yesterday. So here's what each person was given and an invitation to attend today's celebration via Zoom. And so hopefully they are all here today. And we drove around as a staff and dropped off these to everybody's home. So the furthest away was Greg Wilcox. And Greg, I forgot to take a photo when I was at the bottom of your driveway, but I did take a photo as I was leaving Independence Ranch. Greg drives 55 minutes each way to and from San Miguel and Los Osos. So I think he gets the cake for the furthest away. Then we have South County. Beth Summers went and dropped off our South County gifts to David Weinberger, Doug Morrow, and Marianne Morgan. Of course, there were others, but if they didn't answer the door, they're not shown in these photos. So we have others as well. And then Peggy took the Los Osos crew, and she delivered to Los Osos. So Peggy and her grandson, Andrew, dropped it off for Rose, for Susanna Stone, and Jan Fetcho. Then we had Tracy, I believe, who dropped it off in Morro Bay for Mark Riley. And then Brittany did all of San Luis Obispo. And although she didn't find anyone at the door, she did find Rachel's dog wanting to receive the present. Then I went to Atascadero to see David and Rowena. And lastly, Michelle Bueller. So we want to thank everybody for participating. And at this point in time, I would like everybody to raise a glass. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And I'll turn it back over to our board members to congratulate our retirees.
Ms. McGrath knows how to celebrate here. So those are the bubbles that everyone is sharing now. Thank you. Thanks so much. And we are so grateful to our retirees. Some of you have been, I've known throughout the years from when my kids were here. I know that's the same with our other trustees and others. We know, we've known of you, and we so appreciate the great work you did with our students and helping to launch them and provide them the opportunities they're experiencing now. And we hope all the best for you. So thank you so very much.
And Jeremy, our IT director, says if you activate your cameras, we can see you all and we can have another toast together. So if you activate your camera at the bottom where it says video, I know you guys have probably all been doing this a lot. We can see each other and we have the bubbles. And so on the count of three, one, two, three. Cheers to all of you.
Cheers.
Thank you. Enjoy retirement.
Yes.
Yeah, great. Thank you so much. All right. We will we'll move on to correspondence. Just one moment. And at the time, at the time the that the agenda was posted, we had no correspondence. Next is public comment. At this point in time, we welcome comment on matters of district interest. The board will listen, but cannot engage or take action in items not listed on the agenda under the terms of the Brown Act that we operate under. Any speaker is limited to 3 minutes. Ms. Dawson is our timekeeper in the background. If you had wanted to make a public comment, I know I have one waiting. You may email to the district in accordance with what is listed on the agenda. Please identify as applicable the agenda item. And if you wish to, this is the time for general public comment. If you wish to address, speak about a particular agenda topic, you may either address that now or you may wait until that topic appears on the agenda and we get to that. So at this time, I know that we had a public comment from someone that wanted it read in, so I am going to do that. Also, any public comments become part of the record and are recorded into the meeting. This is a comment that was received we have one person waiting to speak. I need to keep this right. Danielle Hellig?
They're not connected.
Oh, okay. Who is not currently present at the meeting, so we'll bring that back up. Melissa Chabra made a comment that I will read. I am a parent of a first grader and a third grader. I urge you to please reopen schools in the fall. I have every confidence the school can implement measures to increase safety, such as increased hand washing, hand sanitizer, and limited socializing at recess and lunch, which while also providing other learning options for those students who need additional support. My spouse and I are both essential workers. The past few months of working and trying to educate our children have just not worked. I urge you to consider families like mine. If schools do not reopen in the fall, or even if they reopen on a limited or rotating basis, what are working parents like us supposed to do? And even if alternate child care is arranged for children of essential workers, if they can be in a child care setting with other children, why can't they be in school? Also, who will pay for that additional child care? Many, many two-parent working families cannot afford to pay more for child care than we already are. In addition, our children are suffering emotional, social, and educational consequences. We will be setting our children up for failure. Parents are not teachers, and it is frankly completely unreasonable to expect them to pretend to be. If the children don't go back in the fall with the normal schedule, the consequences to all families, and especially working families, will be catastrophic. Any other public comments at this time? Yes. One moment, please.
The guest name is Cameron for RK and Jaker.
Okay.
Yes, hi.
Oh, okay.
I apologize for that.
Yes, sorry. All right.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, great. Hi, I'm RK and Jaker's grandmother. And I don't know if this is on the agenda. I got stuck at the post office, so I came in a little late. It's regarding the public pool closure at Morro Bay High School for the summer. Can I speak further on that?
Yes. You need to state your entire name, please, and then you have 3 minutes for comment.
Okay, great. My name is Terry Wilcutt. I live at 989 Balboa Avenue in Morro Bay, California, and I'm the grandmother of two students in the middle school, one in the elementary school. And I'm addressing today the problem or the situation with this pool that was built in a joint effort between the city of Morro Bay and Morro Bay High School. So what I wrote was, I said what I understood was that the pool was built as a joint venture between the school and the community of Morro Bay. We contributed through taxes money for construction, and Morro Bay has the physical site on their physical property. the city of Morro Bay just sent out a notice this morning to children and parents who have participated in their programs, telling them that the pool will not be available for the community this summer. No swim classes, no lap swimming. I actually spoke to a city official who told me it was a unilateral decision by the high school officials to protect their facilities and personnel, that the city had no input in this decision. I think this is grossly unfair. We had no input and now we have no access. And I would like the school board to address if there is a way to reopen this facility for the community use, following the guidelines that I'm sure the state is laying out, but something that would be effective and allow the kids to have some access to some recreation. They're banned from the playgrounds. They're limited in where they can go. It's gotten to be a ridiculous situation. And we want the school district to work with the city of Morro Bay, their rec department, and be able to offer reasonable, safe access to the facilities with the same people, which is our community, who've had the financial interest, the financial access to make these facilities available for everyone. And that's it.
Thank you very much. All right. Mr. Pinkerton, I would just ask that perhaps you get back with her when you have a chance, or if there's...
I have my budget update actually coming up, and I was going to address this issue during that time.
Perfect. Thank you very much. All right, and now's the time for your budget update. We're at item 8.0.
All right.
Budget update.
So, yeah, just a few things. You know, the budget's on the agenda today, so I'll spend a lot of time talking about that with Julie Lang, Director of Finance. So I won't spend too much time there yet as I pop it in. But we so just so that everyone knows, and this is, you know, in terms of the Morro Bay City, and I have been in contact with them. And so basically for everyone to know in the audience today, all public pools are closed at the current time until by the state. So that's something that we're actually working on to see when the regulations will come out. Now, some people may be a little confused because they're seeing private pools open up. So sometimes hotels, you know, maybe mobile home parks or different places where they have pools that are opening at those times. But currently, public pools are not allowed to be open in the state. At least that's, you know, I've been working with the city of San Luis Obispo because they're facing the same issues at Sinsheimer Pool. So we're just waiting for them to issue us the regulations and the information to be able to potentially open up the pool. So the conversations I've had with the city is that the pool is currently closed because of those, that closure. And it's not something that we even have a choice at the current time. We are not even allowing our own students to swim in the pool at this time. So it's just kind of a wait and see. You know, just like opening school, we would love to see that pool open, love to be able to use it, love to be able to have the community use it. We just have to wait until that time period where we actually know what the rules and regulations are to be able to allow it to open, to move forward. And just a caveat in terms of the pool itself, the pool is not a joint venture with the city of Morro Bay. The pool is a school district facility paid for by taxpayers through our bond measure recently. Fortunately, just like all of our facilities, we do allow the public and the city of Morro Bay to utilize those facilities, and we rent them out. And that's the joint partnership that we've had with the city is allowing them to use our facilities. And we love having that partnership with them. It's been fantastic. Unfortunately, there's been a pandemic that's cut that short at the current time, but we look forward to implementing whatever we can in the future to opening up the pool and getting that use going again. But at the current time, from my understanding, from just last week and some of the documentation I've received from the state, public pools are currently not open or allowed to be opened yet. So we'll wait and see. I know the county recently put something out, and that may be more of a budget issue for them, but it was in the paper recently that they're shutting down all the pools throughout the county. So I don't know if there's some confusion that route, but for us, it's just basically waiting for those guidelines. So that's the pool, kind of information for the board to know and for the public to know. We are working with the city of Morro Bay, the city of San Luis Obispo and YMCA to open up childcare centers. So currently the YMCA is set to open up child care centers at Los Ranchos and Pacheco this summer. And we're trying to figure out where they're going to be for Camp Thrive, which will be Baywood and Monarch Grove on the coast. The city of San Luis Obispo is opening up child care centers at Sinsheimer, at C.L. Smith, and at Hawthorne coming up. And the city of Morro Bay has been using their rec department for their current city, and we would be happy to work with them on utilizing Del Mar as well. We know that child care is a big issue, and we're doing everything we can to assist them in kind of getting those locations open for parents over the course of the summer. So those are my two updates. Again, a lot more information about the budget coming up.
Thank you. All right. Next is 8.02, our educational services update.
Great, thank you. Happy to give that. A few things to update you on. I have quite a few items today, but I have some extra things just to remind everyone about. So this week is really a week of celebration. So it's a great time as we finish up with students, and then teachers are finishing up this week as well, that it's a fantastic time to really celebrate, just as we were able to celebrate our retirees. It's a great time to celebrate students and staff as well. I'm really inspired by the creative way in which our sites have, looked for ways to still honor people while we're still, of course, following the county health guidelines and being cautious about that. So lots of activities going on. Unfortunately, the people that are able to gather in person still remains in a very small number. So we will honor those health guidelines and follow that while we still look for ways to creatively celebrate people. We've had quite a few surveys going out. Right now, we have a current survey that is out with our staff looking at our first draft of our reopening plan. So as I have mentioned in the past, our thinking was to create three different plans because there is a lot of uncertainty about August and what we will be facing and which guidelines we will have from the state and the county when it comes 2.5 months away. But we did want to put out, make sure that we are really being thoughtful and thinking ahead and planning. So we have three plans, plan A, B, and C. You'll remember that all three of those plans have a distance learning component for those that need it. Plan A being in person with a lot of extra safety precautions. Plan B also being in person, but it is very different and very complicated because it involves social distancing and small group numbers, which would create a staggered schedule of basically half of the students, approximately the first half of the alphabet coming in the morning and the second half of the alphabet coming in the afternoon each day. So we have that plan as well, and then plan C would be kind of a new improved distance learning. We, staff members really dove in and did an amazing job of starting distance learning in the spring in an emergency situation, but we've also learned a lot from that, have collected a lot of best practices and want to create more consistency in case we need to go back into a distance learning model sometime next year. So those are the three plans. Like I said, the first draft of that by no means is it complete. As was mentioned previously, we're still waiting on guidance from the state and other areas. So we wanted to just get out the first draft before teachers leave for the summer so that people can start to get their eyes on that. And it will continue to be revised and improved based on feedback. At the end of this week, we also hope to put those reopening plans out to parents and gather additional feedback just so parents also can just have an idea of what they can start to plan for in August. So more to come on that, but that first draft is out and we will continue to improve it. Just the last thing is the staff has done an amazing job of preparing for ARES. We have a new student information system coming. Just a big shout out to ISNT that has really gone out of their way. I've heard so many positive comments from staff, really excited about what ARES is going to be able to offer for us, and people really diving in and jumping into that. So more professional development and training to come around that, but I'm excited about what that can do and offer for our organization. They've created kind of what's called a
a sandbox, which means they've started to input our exact data so that people can go play inside Aries and look at our real data related to that. So training has been taking place, and obviously it will continue. So those are updates there, and I'm happy to talk to you about a few other items a little further in the agenda.
Thank you. All right. Next on the agenda is our Measure D update.
Yes. So construction continues on, of course, without having students on campus. It actually has kind of, you know, sped up the process of us moving on. We talked about the budget with the board at the last study session. We've been working together, Chris Bond and myself, our project leads, as well as Mr. Holcomb and the Acme Construction, our architects, and looking at different ways that we can, you know, kind of cut corners and make sure we get all of our projects complete. So I look forward to sharing that information with the board at an upcoming study session. Mr. Holcomb will be presenting kind of the look of the budget itself, the cuts and things that we've made. And Mr. Bonham will share some of the information regarding, you know, kind of the boots on the ground for the board.
Thank you. All right. Next is item 9.01, our public hearing and approval of the 2020-2021 budget. And I'm not sure who's opening. Is that Mr. Pinkerton, Dr. Prater?
This is just the public hearing, Ms. Shepherd. So if you can, this will just be a quick public hearing, open, close, see if anybody has any comments. And then we'll actually, at the presentation itself coming up, we'll give all of the in-depth details at that time, if that's okay.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. That's my confusion. All right, at this time, we will open the public hearing on the approval of the 2020-2021 budget. Is there anyone who wishes to address the board at this time? Seeing no one, we will close the public hearing on this item and move on. This will be, as Mr. Pinkerton indicated, will be discussed in much more length and detail under later in the agenda. All right, next is resolution 10.01, resolution number 2020-21, committed fund balance, adult education fund 11.
And Julie Lang is going to be presenting these resolutions. I don't know if she needs to be unmuted.
Hi there, can you hear me?
Yep, here you are. Thank you.
All right. Okay, so yes, we have a number of things to go over today, but they should all be somewhat familiar to you. That's not the first time you've seen them. Our first resolution is to adopt resolution 2020-21, approving a transfer of $75,000 from the general fund adult education balance to fund 11 for the purposes of adult education. For those of you who were here in 2009, we had SDX3. That basically allowed the adult education fund balance to be swept up and put into the general fund. Now, if we want to continue using Fund 11 for our adult ed program, the district has to commit funds to adult ed to keep that fund open. So every year in our budget, we have committed $75,000 to transfer from that balance. We're currently using the balance of the old adult ed program over to the adult ed fund to continue supporting that program. And that's all I have.
All right. Is there anyone from the public who wishes to address this item? No. All right. Thank you. Thank you for your patience. We just, you know, as you know, we can't see everybody, so we've got people behind the scenes checking to make sure we're okay. So in that, any comments from the by the board? Questions to Ms. Lang? Comments? All right. Seeing none, then if we could have a motion with regard to this resolution. Mr. Unger?
I move approval of resolution 2020-21.
Mr. Buckman?
I'll second that, please.
Thank you. We'll do our roll call vote. Ms. Frame?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Ms. Roger? Yes, she says. Let's see. And me, yes. Did I get everybody? Mr. Buckman? I didn't get the people who made the motion. And Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
So the motion carries. Mr. Millar is not with us, so it passes 6-0.
Mr. Sheffer, if I can just really quick say thank you to Sally Ames, our Director of Adult Education. As the board knows, over the years, the amount of money that was put forth to the adult education program was much larger than it is today. And it's through Sally's efforts of grants and squeezing where she can. And we still have this fantastic, robust program, but none of that would be possible without Sally Ames. So I just wanted to give that quick kudos before we move on to this item. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for doing that, Mr. Pinkerton. And she is, as have all our staff, but she also has displayed great agility in working through all these classes throughout all of our school sites and some of our other surplus property sites in dealing with getting instructors, these part-time instructors, able to operate, run their classes on Zoom if they could, or working hard. It's been quite, she has had her own area to deal with that is a little bit different from everyone else, and she's really, really the patient. So thank you, Ms. Sames, if you are listening. All right, next is item 10.02, another resolution, number 21-2021, authorizing year-end transfers. And Julie, is this you also?
There we go. Okay, yes, this is me. I can't tell when I need to unmute and when somebody else needs to unmute me. So
you're good. We can hear you.
I'm back. So this resolution allows our staff in fiscal services to do the budget transfers necessary to balance the budget and report the most current information before we close the books in August. We don't really have another opportunity to bring our budget transfers to the board before we have closed the books. So this is sort of an advance approval from the board to process these transfers.
And this is a process that we that is familiar to us, that is done in the normal course of yep. operations. Yes, thank you. All right, is there anyone from the public who wishes to address this resolution? No, thank you. Any comments by the board, Mr. Buckman?
Yes, Julie, thanks for being with us. When I look at this, and maybe I'm just not understanding, there's a sentence down here, designated fund balance or the unappropriated fund balance and any expenditure classification or classifications or balance expenditure for the 2018-19 school year. Have we closed that year, or is this just the wrong date in here?
This is the wrong date in here, and I thought I caught that and changed it, but apparently it did not get on here. So sorry about that.
Just didn't want to be that far behind. I know when my kids miss their allowance, they get a little upset when it's 2 years behind.
That's true. Sorry about that.
No, it's no problem. So I would make a motion to approve this with the change if we can do that, or do we have to bring it back? Somebody.
We can do it.
Okay, so I'd make a motion to approve this with the change. For is it the 19-20 school year, Julie?
Yes.
Okay, that's my motion.
And do we have a second, Ms. Roger? And I just wanted to confirm that there are no more questions or comments by the board. Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Mrs. Roger. I will go through. Mr. Buckman?
Dr. Eisenbeth Rogers?
Yes.
Yes. Ms. Frey?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger? Yes. Mr. Unger?
Yes.
And I vote yes as well. So that carries 6-0 with Mr. Millar absent. Next is resolution number 22-2021, approving temporary borrowings between funds.
And this is me again, Julie.
Thank you.
This resolution allows us to transfer money between our funds for cash flow purposes. Because San Luis Coastal relies on property taxes for the majority of our general fund revenue, and property taxes are only distributed in December and April, we sometimes have cash flow management problems in our general fund, or it's possible that we could. We don't currently. In addition, though, there are some other funds where they have to start expending money before they're actually receiving state and federal money. So they sometimes need a loan from the general fund or from another fund. In order to keep a positive balance in their fund. So this is allowing us to make temporary borrowings between funds. And most of these are going to be cleared out before the end of the year, whenever possible. Sometimes, for instance, food services, they receive their revenues long after they have received their or have spent the money. So sometimes we need a little bit of that loan to carry over into the next year.
Any questions? Anyone from the public with a comment or question about this? No. All right. Thank you. And any questions from the board? Mrs. Roger?
This is our customary practice, so if there are no board questions, I'll move approval of this resolution.
Dr. Eisenbeth Rogers?
And I'll second.
Thank you. So we have a motion by Mrs. Rogers, a second by Dr. Eisenbeth Rogers. We will do a roll call vote. Mrs. Rogers?
Yes.
Dr. Eisenbeth Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Ms. Frey?
Yes.
And me. All right. Again, motion carries 6-0 with Mr. Millar's absence. All right. Next, we have our item 11.01, Coastal Bilingual Program, and it's my understanding this will be presented by Mr. Mayfield and Ms. Stevens. There you are.
Yeah, good afternoon, everyone. In addition to transitioning to a distance learning platform at her school, Principal Stevens has been super busy getting ready for a bilingual program to kick off. And I think she, more than the rest of us, are especially hopeful that kids are back in session to start up a 90-10 program in kindergarten in the fall. But she's got an update today and is going to introduce the fantastic kindergarten team. She's really put together a great team of teachers to kick off this program in the fall. Mrs. Stevens?
Awesome. Thank you. Well, we have a presentation. I don't know, do I share that or is that, Mandy, are you sharing the slides?
Mandy's got it.
Go ahead and share it if you like.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
You can go ahead and share it if you like.
Oh, I can?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Just released permissions to share.
Okay. I'll give it a try.
There you go.
All right. Wow. Okay. I'm used to Zoom, but not usually with little ones. So this is a different way to Zoom. I love it. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having us today. We're so excited to share an update of where we are with our dual language immersion program. And I'm also happy to say that we have our kindergarten teachers with us today too. So they're going to be sharing some updates with you as well, as far as some of the work that, that they have been doing as well. So we're really excited to kind of get you caught up to date with all the work that's been done so far.
So today I'm going to talk about just kind of our progress, our engagement, input, all of the focus group updates that we've had. I've also had the opportunity to be collaborating with some other dual immersions across the state, which has been really exciting. And then I'm going to update you on our kinder enrollment and orientation and how we're getting ready for the fall. And then, like I said, our rockstar kindergarten teachers are going to share with you some of the updates that they have that we're getting started for the fall. So first, as always, I just want to thank the board so much for your approval, you know, last fall. And even before that, just starting that exploration, you know, gosh, over a year ago in March when we started this process together. And I just wanted to thank the board so much for your support and the district as well to start this fantastic program on the coast. As you remember, we had a lot of outreach and a lot of engagement over this past almost year and a half that we've been on this journey together to start with this kinder cohort starting in 2020. We've had multiple opportunities, both formal and informal, for input, and we've just been so lucky to have such great community support as well throughout this process. As far as our communication updates go, as you know, we updated our website to have bilingual information on it. We were able to distribute lots and lots of flyers and brochures. We even hung signs all around the exterior of Baywood, if you had driven by in the past few months, that talked about, you know, upcoming kinder registration and orientation. We were able to visit all of the preschools on the coast to give them information about the program, and also collaborated with First Five to start talking to our preschool community as well about the upcoming dual immersion program. I was able to talk to both the Los Osos Rotary and the Morro Bay Rotary pre-closure. We were very busy and got to do all of that. We also got to present to all of the ELACs on the coast as well. We had our little cafecito, our little kind of principal's coffee with incoming, potential incoming kinders in December. And then we also did that Facebook Live that's still on our Facebook page that had lots of information about our program as well. We were lucky to have an incredible advisory committee and lots of different focus groups that were a part of the process. And then we also, right before closure, pretty much had our community forum where we got to update the community about all of our progress as well. So it has been a busy, busy year, but I'm so proud of all the work that we've been able to accomplish together. So as you remember, we had about 40 different community members, teachers, staff members that were interested in being a part of this planning committee throughout this year. We had that kind of that accordion process where we had the district committee, where it was myself, Don Addis, Rick Mayfield, Kimberly McGrath, met on a weekly basis just to kind of go through the process, making sure that we were going, you know, being very thorough with our communication with all of our stakeholders. And then we had our advisory committee that was representative of a little bit of everyone. So we had staff members on there, teachers on there, community members, incoming families, current families, English learner families. So a little bit of everyone representing that advisory committee. Then from there, we broke it down into different focus groups. So you'll remember we had an enrollment focus group that really looked very closely at our enrollment and kind of looked at different guidelines. And I think last time I was with all of you, I was presenting that thorough, I don't know if you remember the whole spreadsheet with the different boxes on it, the flow chart kind of enrollment. And then we had our comprehensive enrollment plan from there as well. And that was thanks to our wonderful focus group around enrollment. Diane Frost helped us lead our special ed focus group. And that was great to kind of look at what different programs are doing across the state. Then we also had a focus group for current students. So that was families of our current families, and what are some ways that we could sprinkle some Spanish into our first through fifth? And then most importantly is making sure that our school feels like one united school, right? We don't want to just have one program in kinder, learning and dual immersion, then first through fifth. So how do we continue to make sure that we have this one united school? So that was wonderful to hear from current families as well. And then we have our program development team, and that was a team of teachers at our site. We had one teacher per grade level on that, and that was really exciting just to start thinking about the curricular side of it and how we can work together to build this program. I also was able to be a part of a leadership symposium with CABE. And CABE is, you know, the California Association for Bilingual Educators. And what was wonderful about that is that we met three times, again, pre-closure, with other administrators throughout the state that are starting other bilingual programs. It was fascinating to collaborate with other administrators from, you know, administrators that were starting like a Vietnamese dual immersion program to a Mandarin dual immersion program. And then obviously the majority of the other ones were Spanish dual immersion programs. So it was great to just collaborate with them and to be able to talk about the different processes that other districts were going through to start different dual immersion programs. In January, myself and Aaron Kleiber, who's been helping with program development at Baywood, we were able to go down to Chula Vista and visit some of their dual immersion programs there. And they have a really incredible K-12 pathway that they're using throughout their district. So that was really wonderful to kind of see those seeds that were planted there of this K-12 pathway and how we could continue to do something like that with San Luis Coastal. So that was really exciting to be a part of that this year and to really have some great collaboration with other educators across the state through dual immersion programs, which was great. And then we had started to get ready in March or February for kinder orientation and kinder open enrollment. So we were able to get in three in-person kinder orientations. That seems like a lifetime ago now, but we were so lucky to get those in right before we closed. In those three kinder orientations, we had almost 50 families come throughout those three kinder orientations. They were packed rooms every single time. And it was so awesome to hear from the community how excited they were that we were offering this on the coast. There was lots of, I think my question that I was asked the most is, what happens if I don't get in? How can I guarantee that I get my child in? So it was so wonderful just to hear that support from a lot of our coastal families through the kinder orientations. As you know, we had 2 weeks of in-person open enrollment, and then we had closure, and the rest of it was online open enrollment. But I was really, really impressed that even though we, you know, only had 2 weeks of in-person open enrollment, we still had 85 students that chose dual immersion that wanted to be a part of our program. Of those 85, 46 of those were within the Baywood boundary, 26 were from Monarch Grove, and 13 were from Del Mar. So I felt really great that, you know, it really shows that need and how so many families really, really wanted that here on the coast. If you remember from our discussion last time about our enrollment recommendations, we had a priority group one. And within that priority group one, that was the Baywood boundary students. So students that live within the Baywood boundary would automatically be enrolled in the program. Spanish speakers would automatically be enrolled in the program. And then any siblings would automatically be enrolled in the program. So we were able to accommodate all of those students from priority group one. So that was like the 46 that were from Baywood and then about 10 others that were within priority group one. So that was wonderful to be able to do that. We did have our lottery in April, and we were able to add about 8 more students from Del Mar and Monarch Grove from there within our lottery. So we do have a waiting list right now, and so we'll kind of just see what happens these next few weeks. I mean, it's been interesting with enrollment and being out of school, so not being here at school. So we're leaving a couple of extra spaces right now in case there are students from that priority group one that live within the Baywood boundary that come up and say, I didn't enroll and here I am. And then from there, if those spaces are not filled, then we'll be pulling from our waiting list. But we were really proud to see for our first class that we'll be starting with 3 classes, and we're really excited about starting with that. We also are starting a welcome center on campus, so we will be determining our EL status. We haven't been able to do the assessments right now, obviously, with school closures, but we have about 12 Spanish speakers right now that we will be determining what their EL status is, you know, once we get back and they're able to actually do any assessments in person. So that's kind of put another we're figuring all these things out, how to do things remotely. So, but we're just so, so excited for our upcoming kinder class. So from there, I'm going to introduce you to our three awesome rock star kinder teachers, and they're going to talk about some of the kinder planning they've already been starting to do, and they have just dove right in. I mean, gosh, we've already met a few times through Zoom, even just these past few weeks, which has been great. So I'm going to introduce, I think, Jen Sandals. Mrs. Sandals is going to talk first a little bit about collaboration with Pacheco. So can I hand it over to Jen?
Yes. Hello, everyone. I'm Jen Sandals, and I have been teaching in the district for several years, primarily in kindergarten. And in the past 3 years, I've been teaching kindergarten at Pacheco, which I was very fortunate for that opportunity. And I'm so excited to help start the program on the coast. We are so fortunate to have Pacheco as a dual immersion model in town. And I have a solid working relationship with our colleagues. And so I think we are already off to a great start in the collaboration piece. All six kindergarten teachers and both of our principals have already met via Zoom. And we have plans already calendared for meeting throughout the summer. So it's just great that the two groups of kindergarten teachers can collaborate and work together and creating two solid dual immersion programs in our district.
Awesome. Thank you, Jen. And Virginia Duaso is going to talk a little bit about how we've been busy ordering materials and some of the things we've been doing for Kinder. Are you there, Virginia?
Hi. So I'm Virginia Duaso. I'm fairly new at the district, but I've been here for 2 years, and so far I've been able to do the EL specialist in reading intervention at Monarch Grove. I've learned a ton there. Previously to this, I've come from Paso Robles, and I've taught third, second, and kinder. I'm very excited to join the new team at Baywood Elementary. And we're excited about starting the dual immersion. We've started ordering materials to get us ready. We've also sent parents a kinder welcome packet that has gone, letting them know about just what to look forward for kinder, what kinds of things that they can do at home to get their kinders ready. We've also sent books to get them excited, just to know that you know school is coming. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun working with the new kinder teachers, and we're looking for connections, brainstorming connections on how to connect with the kiddos coming in and their parents, just so we can become more personal and more connected, so that way they know us by the time school starts. Thank you.
And we have Kylie Burke, who's going to talk a little bit about our program development that we've been doing.
Yes. So, hi, my name's Kylie Burke. I am just finishing up my first year of teaching, my first year in the district, at Baywood. I was a student teacher last year at Pacheco. So it's been really interesting watching this process because I've had the experience of the dual immersion program, and now I'm here working with these amazing people, and we're creating this whole new program, which has just been such a great experience. And so since being at Baywood, I've been able to be part of the program development focus group. It's one of the few that we have, and I've been part of it all year. And really what we've been focusing in this group is that connection piece has been so important to us, is how can we make sure that our first through fifth grade next year can still feel connected with this school, just because, you know, right now we're starting this new dual immersion with kinder. Yes, that's great. We also want to make sure our other students are getting that same experience, and so we still have that connected school. So right now it's all of the teachers. We've come together. We brainstormed a whole bunch. It was crazy. We had lists up all through the room. We ended up coming up with, over 20 different ideas that we could, you know, incorporate during the year. A couple of them that we can do right now that we're planning on doing is making sure we're putting labels, bilingual labels, all through the school. We have, you know, certain street signs at our school that we can do both with. We can label the library, biblioteca, so little things. So first through fifth grade are also going to be getting Spanish. We just started a Spanish club during lunchtime, and so we thought we could continue with that. We're thinking about maybe doing some sort of academic wheel with Spanish involved. We have different school events that we're adding. We want to celebrate Dia del Niño and different things like that, so we can still make sure Baywood is being Baywood and we still feel like we're one whole community, even though right now we're kind of in this weird situation of, you know, starting the Spanish program but also maintaining what Baywood is. So it's been a really great meeting and, you know, development of that, but we still have lots of things to keep planning for, but right now I think we're on a good track for it.
Thank you, Kylie. So we are so excited, and these kinder teachers are such rock stars that they are not starting their summer next week. They are going to be doing planning all next week here at Baywood. So we are next week going through our entire scope and sequence. We're laying out all of the kindergarten standards, and we're looking at the whole scope and sequence for the year, and we're going to plan and cross our fingers for plan A, and we will adjust if it's plan B or C, which is fine. But we decided we just need to move ahead as if one day we know we are going to teach in person again, so we are going to start planning and doing it right. So we are so excited about that next week. We're going to be doing our planning. We also had a Zoom last Friday with Pacheco and our kinder team and just started talking about what are some ways that we can collaborate, especially if we have to go to a plan B or C. What's awesome is that we're going to now have 6 kinder bilingual teachers. So that's going to be awesome if we do have to look at, you know, distance learning in a kindergarten model, and how can we use all 6 of our experts to work together instead of just, you know, one at each site. So we're super excited to start thinking about that. We have another date in July to start looking at that with the Pacheco team to kind of see where our plan is for the district at that point and how we can work together as a whole kinder dual immersion team. So we're really, really excited about that. But as you can see, we've got a rock star kinder team that's so excited to get started. And we just feel so, so lucky to be able to offer this on the coast. I have had families come in, you know, over and over again and just say how excited they are for next year. So we are as well. So just in summary, we will have our kinder roundup in the beginning of August. So we're hoping that we're going to be able to meet all of our kindergartners face to face, and we'll see if it's, you know, masked or socially distant or whatever it looks like. But we're excited to hopefully offer kinder roundup at the beginning of August. We've had such great community engagement and, you know, planning is well underway. So we are so, so excited to get started. And again, we just are so thankful for all of your support from the board to the district. I mean, we just have felt so, so supported with starting this. And I feel like the community is just really, really excited about this opportunity here on the coast. So I hope that all of you can come in person and see it in action in the fall. And even if it's not in person, you're welcome to join in on a Zoom and start singing some Spanish songs with us, or we'll see what it's going to look like, right? But you're always welcome at Baywood, and we would love to show you all the wonderful work that we're doing together. So thank you again just for all the support and this journey to make this happen on the coast. We're really excited.
Okay, thank you. At this time, I see Ms. Frame's hand up. Go ahead. Evelyn, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Well, I want to thank you, Mr. Mayfield and Ms. Stevens. I can tell that you guys are tremendously excited about the start of the year. So, because we all are. A couple of quick questions, and you alluded to it, but I wasn't sure. Can you give me the breakdown or the breakdown of the number of EL students versus EO students in the classes? Mm-hmm. Do we have those numbers?
Yeah. So right now we have, 12 students that have indicated that they're Spanish speakers. Mm-hmm. But again, since the Welcome Center isn't open, we haven't done the official testing yet, but we have 12 that have indicated that they're Spanish speakers, and then the rest would be English speakers.
So that looks like about 4 per class, right?
As of this time. There's quite a few other, there's about a handful of others that are bilingual students as well, but we are not classified as Spanish speakers.
Okay. And I really was excited to hear about the Welcome Center, you know, on the coast, because I know that's been a hardship for our family. So I really appreciate that. The other thing is, where's my questions? So is that breakdown similar to the breakdown at Pacheco, you know, regarding ratio of EL and EO? Mr. Mayfield, can you?
No, I would say it's lower. You know, overall in the last, say, 3 years, we've seen a decline in English learner enrollment. And I think part of that's, you know, due to what's been happening, you know, with immigration in this country and that kind of thing. We're also, you know, our preschool enrollment is significantly down. And overall, really, our kinder enrollment is down. I think I want to say like 100 students lower. At least the last time I checked a week or so ago, we were 100 students lower than we normally are. So we're hopeful that we'll see an influx of students, you know, as things start to open back up and at the beginning of the school year. But no, I would say that's lower for sure.
Okay. And I get this would be something certainly not to be asked or really answered now, but I guess overall, would a district overall lower EL enrollment have significant consequences for Pacheco and for Baywood? And I don't, you know, I don't know what that, you know, looks like. We're in a kind of a unique time and a unique area. I don't know if you can really address that. And yeah, maybe it's for another time. So,
well, I would say, you know, over time, things have changed significantly. You know, when I started back at Pacheco as a teacher in the middle 90s, it was one way. And then when I came back as principal, the EL enrollment was again very low. And, you know, families were not connected to the bilingual program. But that changed over time. And it grew to where we had waiting lists for several years on the EL side of things. But again, those English learner numbers have declined over time. And I think that's just a phenomenon of, you know, the economy and how expensive it is to live here. And then the immigration issues that have come to a head over the last several years. And, you know, we'll build the program and we'll build, you know, a reputation where English learners will want to come to this program. And depending on what our funding does, you know, over the next several years, you know, we may be in a place where we're trying to attract students from outside. We'll see. It's one of those moving targets, but we feel really good about the numbers in open enrollment this year. There was great interest from Del Mar, from Monarch Grove. I got calls after the lottery, like we do every year, saying, you know, we didn't get in. What's going on? But, you know, as a district, we've increased our capacity from about the mid-80s, accommodating mid-80s at Pacheco alone, to about 130 district-wide, which is a great thing. And so we'll continue to work on it. You know, you have to adjust your teaching when the EL numbers get a little lower, but it's certainly still doable in a situation like that. So,
okay, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate, you know, that, you know, we're just in different times right now, and I appreciate that. The other thing I think would be my last is, and it does speak to, I'm sure, the phone calls that you've gotten, but have we... when will, I know there's a waiting list and there are some slots that we've reserved. When will families be, you know, the final decision, you know, the final countdown? When will they be told if they're in or if they're not? And then given the interest, is there a reason why we would, I mean, if we have the numbers for like another class and this, you know, class as a cohort could be moving through our secondary schools, and that's kind of really our goal. I guess why wouldn't we offer another kinder program if we have those numbers and enrollment too?
Yeah. I would say right now things are in great flux. And as I said, across the district, our kinder numbers for open enrollment are down about 100 students. And it would be really hard to make a decision like that right now because of the impact that it would have on the other programs on the coast. You know, we're doing great numbers there. And also, as you alluded to earlier, the ratios of English learners to classrooms, and staffing is another thing to take into consideration when you're looking at adding programs, you know, you have to look at the program K-5 and then really K-12 and, you know, plan ahead. So if you add a fourth teacher now, you're looking at four teachers for first grade, four for second grade, that kind of thing. So we think that by adding three classes at Baywood, that, you know, that gives us the balance that we're looking for to keep the other schools intact and thriving, you know, those community schools, but also to build a solid program and increase our capacity for bilingual education as a district. And then, you know, we'll have to take a look at what things look like in another year or two. Hopefully, you know, we'll be back in session in the fall. Hopefully things stabilize. Hopefully our economy remains robust and strong. And then we'll see what, you know, what that looks like, for the future. But we feel like three classes is absolutely the best course of action to take at this time, given all the circumstances.
And I'll also just add, even just physical space at Baywood, I think if we were to go to four and then think about that going up through the years, we just don't have the capacity right now at Baywood to be able to sustain four classes going through. So as much as I would love to, you know, have everyone that wants bilingual education to be able to get it, I think we have to look at all the ramifications of that with what it does to the other coastal schools, and then being able to support that on our campus would be really difficult, having those numbers.
Okay, thank you. I do think it is really difficult for the parents to, particularly because we're excluding an entire cohort of kids from that option to participate in the certificate. So I think that's a, you know, friends and all of that, it's a huge issue as we move forward, as we look at that K through 12. And I do know, I mean, looking at the space of Baywood, I mean, at one time that school, believe it or not, had over 600. So I know. So it, yeah, well, and so it's the decision has, you know, has been made. I certainly understand the impact. So I really appreciate your hard work, Ms. Stevens, Mr. Mayfield, for all those answers. So again, thank you for all the hard work. And I'm looking
thank
forward
you, Ms.
to seeing. Gracias. Gracias a todos.
Mr. Buckman, did you have a question or comment? Okay. Anyone else? Okay. Yes. Thank you for all the work going into this. And it's, you know, certainly not the first time we've had sites with waiting lists and people wanting to shift around and move around. Even in the past at some of our traditional community schools where students have wanted to just prefer to be at another traditional school than another, and we've had to, they've had to go through a process, and sometimes they've gotten in and sometimes they haven't. So it's been, you know, this is not an unknown situation, but it is a little more noticeable at our schools of choice. So thank you. So next is 11.02, which is presentation of launch plan and approval of the preliminary LCAP.
Great, thank you. Mandy, if you don't mind displaying the launch plan, that would be great. So we'll start with the launch plan first. I'm here with Mrs. Frost and Mrs. Storm, and we would love to talk to you first of all about our launch plan, and then I'll move into the preliminary LCAP. So the launch plan is really thinking about being thoughtful, being planned, and thinking ahead about what are our academic, what are our support, and what are our social emotional responses to students considering the closures. So it's really targeted on us trying to start to wrap our heads around what are the unfinished learnings that students have in this situation that we've been in? What type of supports are going to be needed? You'll remember from the feedback we were already receiving from sites is that they would love more supports for students, more interventions, and this situation that we're in has shown us that that's going to be needed even more, as well as thinking about that there's students that are going to possibly come back with some social emotional needs. So we've had the pleasure of starting this initial thinking around what we're calling a launch plan. So thinking about all three areas, I'm going to hand it over to Ms. Storm to begin. So she's going to talk about the academic side, the steps that we'll begin taking and that have already been taken to address the academic needs and then the support needs related to academics. And then she'll hand it over to Ms. Frost to talk about the social-emotional sides and the supports related to the social-emotional side, and I'll close it up for you at the end. Right, Ms. Storm. And Mandy, if you want to click on the next slide, that'd be great.
Thanks, Kim. Before I dive in, I just want to take a minute to thank you for giving us time to share this work. It's been a real pleasure to work with staff from across K-12 to develop this plan. I anticipate that we'll continue to add detail as we move through the spring and the summer, and I think we're off to a really strong start. So our launch team has grounded ourselves in a focus on acceleration, not remediation. The typical approach to remediation, which is providing instruction and work from earlier grades, won't catch our students up fast enough. They will just be perpetually behind. In order to accelerate our students, the team's focusing on several key actions. First, we've already started diagnosing the unfinished learning from this school year through surveys, collaboration, and vertical articulation. Once that work is complete, staff will prioritize the unfinished learning to determine which standards and skills are most important for success in future grades or courses. Then, teachers will adjust their scope and sequence plans to insert the unfinished learning where it makes the most sense for the year. So for example, you may have some geometry standards that weren't taught in third grade. The fourth grade teacher would look at, okay, which ones are the most important and put them in right before the learning for fourth grade versus coming into fourth grade and teaching those things and then moving on. So it's in the moment. This work's being done now and will continue into the summer. And on the plan there, you can see the columns May and June 2020 and summer. When students return, we're going to need to be nimble. Using quick universal screeners, we'll gather more data about student learning gaps. Teachers will again need to collaborate to make refinements to the scope and sequence. We'll also use this data to determine what should be taught in the classroom versus in intervention. For example, if most students in the class are missing the same concept, that would be something for the teacher to consider weaving into the year's instruction. However, if only a few are missing a critical skill, that would be better served for an intervention group. You can see these ideas in detail on the map under the August assessments, analyzing results, and classroom considerations branches. So before I turn it over to Diane, any questions or comments about the academic portion of the plan? I wanted to give you kind of a broad overview, and you can see the detail on the map.
Any questions from the board on this section? All right. Ms. Frame?
No, I'm gonna withhold. I do have questions, but I don't want to do it now because it's tied in context with a bigger picture. So I'm gonna hold off if you don't mind.
All right, if you could go on to the next slide. Thank you, Mandy. All right, this looks at the SEL supports that we believe are necessary as we welcome students back to our campuses or if we continue some form of distance learning in the fall. And I think we ought to all be pretty proud of the fact that we're working in a district where when we talk about academic concerns for the fall, we're also talking about SEL or social-emotional learning for our students. This is a progression, and if you read across looking at the left and moving all the way to the right, our first column looks at May and June, and we are gathering information regarding the social-emotional needs of our community, students and families, and the training that our staffs might need to welcome kids back in the fall. If you go to the summer planning section, you'll see that we've offered 3 per diem days to our PPS counselors. Those are our counselors across all campuses. And we also have put in a request to increase the MFT and MFTI allocation across the district. So not only will our PPS counselors get some planning days, but our MFTs,
who provide some of that upper level therapeutic supports will increase on every campus in the district, both elementary, middle, and high school. Some of the things that we're going to try to tackle over the summer, we want to analyze our list of no contact students. So we do have some students who have gone silent. We know they may have a rough entry in the fall. We want to identify them ahead and provide those supports. Our counselors will plan for the use of our increased MFTs. We'll reevaluate the tiers, so our tiers of support in the district, and make sure that those match our post-COVID needs. We're going to prepare trauma-informed practices, resources for our staffs. Our staffs need our counselors and our MFTs to guide them on how to work with the students, and our counselors will be working on that this summer. We also are looking at putting together common lessons in the area of SEL. So what can we provide to all elementary students that come from our Second Steps curriculum? What can our secondary counselors put together for implementation in the classrooms to support our students? And then we're going to finalize a COVID return questionnaire. So we really get our kids to tell us about the experiences they had during closure and what they might need in the fall. In terms of August planning, we're looking at screeners, and we've talked with the board about this before. Screeners that look at the behaviors of our kids and the risks of our kids. We will coordinate our mental health teams across our districts. And we did talk about this before closure as well. The idea that we want a mental health team on every one of our campuses, our school psychologists, our program specialists, our nurses, our counselors, our MFTs, all coming together a couple of times a month to talk about the SEL needs of our kids. With this closure, with the COVID pandemic, it's needed even more to plan these services. In terms of August with our staffs, again, we'll prioritize our tiers. Our mental health teams will gather and review student data, and we hope to make a presentation across all levels to our staffs, talking again about trauma, setting everybody up at the beginning of the year to support the students in the classroom. And then for our kids, looking at August, if we have our students on campuses, and even if we have distance learning for a portion of our kids, we want to analyze our data that we've received from our surveys. We want to present these common assessments and common lessons that we've already talked about. I think this next one is really important, and this idea came from a group of administrators. We have student leaders on our campuses. How do we take these student leaders and have them work with the rest of the students on campus, making sure that we maintain our culture of care and connection? That will be huge as our kids are coming back to their campuses. And then again, our mental health teams are going to be critical in August, out there among the kids, looking at data, looking at what their needs are, and providing for that. So that kind of gives you an idea of where we are going in terms of SEL and supporting our students and families.
Great, Mandy. If you don't mind, the last slide, and then we're happy to take any questions or comments. So, you know, just to wrap it up, you think about, we're starting this launch plan and have already started many of the actions of gathering data in all three of the areas. What are the academic needs, support and intervention, and social emotional needs? We're starting that preparation now, and we will address those needs throughout the year. And one of the things to think about is this is where the overlap comes with the LCAP. So many of these things you see funded within the LCAP. Okay, so that's why you see some overlap. And just to help clarify that, these actions, many are accounted for within the LCAP and funded that way. Okay, happy to answer any questions. If you want to unshare, Mandy, we can answer questions face-to-face.
All right, first I'll ask if there's anyone from the public. It does not appear there is. I see Mr. Unger than Mr. Buckman, so Chris and Mark.
Yeah. First of all, I just want to say how happy I am that we're paying attention to the social emotional needs of kids. All of my reading makes me think that this is going to be key to a successful start. that our kids are going to have needs that we can't even understand right now. So I'm glad that the district's been thinking about that. I'm glad that our LCAP reflects the additional funding that's going to be necessary for those things. So I just wanted to thank you. And I think that by having these additional supports, it's going to support our staff as well. And so for all those reasons, I'm happy that we're paying attention to this, and I'm happy that we understand the importance of it.
Thank you. Mr. Buckman?
Thanks. First of all, I want to sort of echo, I guess, a little bit of what Chris is saying. I just think that this is actually going to have some really good benefits, I think, that are going to go on much longer and create a great relationship or better relationship for kids and the campus and the staff. I do have a little more specific question. Kimberly, I liked your linking this to the LCAP, but I'm wondering is there a specific dollar amount that has been examined on this? It's going to cost, we've got some LMFTs and we've got some other things. Is there a dollar amount to this package?
I haven't packaged the dollar amount just specific to the launch plan, but I will tell you, item by item, they are accounted for within the LCAP, which I know that you read carefully. So I'll tell you some broad numbers is, like the MFT, addition was around $125,000, three additional days for our PPS counselors. We have the universal screener that's able to do the academic and the social emotional side. Potentially, if we use that one, that's accounted for in there as well. That's FastBridge, the one that we've mentioned in the past. So there's, you know, I'm kind of just globally telling you a few of those pieces. Of course, there would be some teacher planning time.
Okay, thanks.
Anyone else? Ms. Prang?
So are we, I guess in this, is this presentation of launch plan an approval of the preliminary LCAP? This is
process? Launch plan, yeah, launch plan is just a presentation. Next, I'll be happy to present the preliminary LCAP. As you all remember, the official LCAP will be in December, but I would love your approval just on the LCAP portion, on the preliminary LCAP portion on the next presentation.
Well, okay, but then I guess I don't know if this has been you'll have to direct me, because I think some of the things I'm having I've been reading all of as we all have all these documents and this tremendous work that has gone into this, and while I'm supportive. I really am incredibly supportive of the SEL support launch plan. I think that's really, as Chris said, we have a lot of things that are unknown, that are unmet, and we were starting this process beforehand. But when we look at the academic support plan, I have grave concerns about that. And I don't know if this is the appropriate time, but I can't really support that this plan and for this, for several reasons. One is which, you know, a lot of this was, the LCAP was determined before COVID, and the entire LCAP process, or this plan assumes that we're opening, you know, plan A. So this, everything that I see on here is really related to plan A, except oddly enough, the SEL plan. There seems to be some real components that whatever plan we are off, you know, develop, plan A, B, or C, that the SEL plan is malleable enough and can really be directed for plan A, B, or C. But the academic plan, while I've been incredibly, for lack of a better term, pushy about closing the achievement gap, I have concerns about it because when I look at this support plan and I look at, you know, the August and the summer planning, I think we're creating an undue amount of stress on both students and parents and teachers. When I look at August assessments and I see chunk assessments and schedule thoughtfully, teams analyze, you know, when we reopen schools, I mean, whatever plan is decided upon, that has to be kind of seamless and timeless and focused. And this seems like stressful. And things that we haven't even thought of when we were, I'm thinking about, you know, plan A, you know, which is really, something that we're all, rooting for, at least I am. I'm thinking little things about what, you know, teachers are going to need to practice the protocols, the actual protocols of, you know, what that looks like. You know, how do I plan my day, my schedule, you know, the hand washing? How do I set up my classroom? All of those things are an enormous amount of stress on our staff. And I don't really think that we've addressed that. And so we're adding this component that could really be quite a stressor. And that's kind of what I've been hearing from staff, is that, you know, these expectations of, you know, the screener and training, and yet I have to practice the protocol. So that's a big concern of mine. Then we have the Aries, which is, even though it's a great operating system, teachers are still going to need to learn that. The other thing is, let's see, I had my notes in here. Let's see. The other thing is we're all talking about the distance learning plan. And we have, as a district, been really robust about getting devices and hotspots and really collecting information. But I think the second rollout that we're going to potentially have, or if it's an adoption, there needs to be, and we go with Plan C. I don't see anything in this. I mean, I know there's some in the, you know, and I'm looking at some of the planning that's included, but it's, you know, our parents and our teachers are going to expect a much more seamless rollout, protocols. And so that's another focus that staff will have to be trained on, collaborate with, really be robust. So, the other thing is we have this, you know, dual immersion program on the coast that we are, you know, need to support. And so that staff is going to be another system that they are going to need to implement. And I think, and this is only speaking for myself, that I really would rather see the launching of this SEL with a reevaluation of the academic support come in December. And the reason why I say that is because we could wind up in August having what I consider academic false positives, where kids, you know, they're coming in and they look like they need some work, but really they maybe not. And the fact that our teachers are going to really need to practice these protocols, greeting, dismissal, that's got to be kind of a muscle memory. It's kind of what Resolute talked about. I am reluctant to support it for that, for those reasons. I think it's creating an undue burden, an undue lack of, and a lack of the focus where it needs to be. Even though we are a learning organization and it is about student achievement, it maybe wind up being counterproductive to do these two robust plans at the same time when our staff and everybody is needing to consider those things. So, for those reasons.
Thank you. Did you want to address any of that, Kim?
If you don't mind, just real quick, a couple of things that come to mind is, number one, remember that we do have December to make adjustments, right, between when the school starts and when the official LCAP is approved. So we did put plans in there as if we were going to be in person, you know, because we don't want to create plan A, B, and C of the preliminary LCAP as well. So we did start it as if we were in plan A, but keep in mind that we would make adjustments if we were in a full distance learning model for sure. And I think the other thing to keep in mind that I have in mind is that I do think that there still needs to be an academic focus, although obviously we have SEL in mind. And that is a lot of what we all do. I'm sure you too, when you were a teacher, right? That we pull those kids in and really take time to create a community and to make them feel welcome and comfortable and build them up together. And part of teaching routines and procedures and those things are part of what we do at the beginning of the school year. Are those routines and procedures going to look different? Yes. But I do think that at the beginning of every school year, we take time and we know that some of that time is well worth it at the beginning because it saves you instructional time in the long run. So just, that's just something in my mind, you know, to keep in mind that I do think having high expectations for kids, making them feel so warm and welcome and part of a community, addressing those SEL needs, but then also keeping in mind that we want to stay focused on their academic needs so that we can catch them up, I think is still a solid plan.
Well, I mean,
go ahead, Evelyn.
I'm sorry. I absolutely concur about, and I'm not at all suggesting that the academics would take, you know, be of less of a consideration. But when I again look at this August plan, the impact on our staff and really even on our students. And I think the other thing is, you know, I was looking at those plans. A lot of assessment hasn't been able to be done. I'm thinking in specifically in terms of our LPAC, which typically we do a lot over the summer. We just yell at kids and those kinds of things we're not able to do. So one of the plans I looked at was, you know, having plexiglass, right? And for our therapeutic value of our counselors. So now I'm thinking, well, is that going to be needed for the, you know, when teachers are doing the one-on-one that's required for the LPAC? And we don't have that information. So again, I see this as a fabulous plan and a plan that the academic portion of this could be, you know, what my fear is it will become a living and breathing document and teachers will look at this and go, assessments. Parents will look at that and that the living and breathing that this document will not become flexible because it is, as we say, it's our launch plan. And there will, if we really believe or want flexibility, then we should build that into the launch plan and say, and have that, but I don't see that. So I won't say any more. Sorry, Kim. Thank you for your work.
I saw your hand, but I have a couple of questions also, if I may here. You know, it's my understanding from some things we've been through in the past as a district, such as the PG&E bankruptcy, the recession several years ago, that we have been able to rapidly respond to unforeseen circumstances. And that's just something I wanted to point out. I mean, since I've been with the district and on the board, we have had things occur that no one thought we'd see before or hadn't seen before and had to respond rapidly to. And I think that this organization particularly has the ability to do that to some extent. It's also my understanding that in development of everything that you put before us today, Kimberly and Laura and Diane, none of this plan, I know that the LCAP process started pre-closure and we gathered a lot of input and all that, but the plans and this work that's been done have been ongoing since the closure and still involving collaboration and lots of voices. Am I correct in that?
You're correct in that.
Okay, thank you. So this isn't something that was created. This has not all been created top down and it won't be implemented top down. I mean, I know that it doesn't, I guess what I'm trying to say is I understand that we can't say at this point whether we're going to need plexiglass around everything because we just don't know yet. And I don't think but we also have things that we're required to do. Our budget we have to do in accordance with state law. Correct, Mr. Pinkerton? He's nodding. Okay. So the adoption of the LCAP we have to do in accordance with state law. Is that correct, Kim?
Yes, the official LCAP we will not need to approve, but we would bring to you for the, you know, November, December. So right. This is our preliminary because we need to help set direction and start moving forward, because I wouldn't want us to kind of be rudderless, as right. Dr. Prater said, right, in the meantime.
Yep, correct. You're seeking approval of this preliminary plan today.
Correct.
And it's my understanding that we do have the ability to continue to make changes. We are always welcome and seeking input from our stakeholders, and that we can't, I think that it's really been proven to us the last few months that no matter, you know, kind of the best laid plans, I'm sure we all in our own minds had plans made, thought we knew what the future was going to be over the next few months. And we've all had the rug pulled out from under us to one extent or another, personally, professionally, watching friends and family and people we care about and situations occurring that we didn't know. So, I guess what I'm seeking is some reassurance that as we move forward and as things remain, you know, as we have to just be used to the discomfort of not knowing right now, that we can make changes either on the fly if necessary or deeper, more thoughtful adjustments going forward as the landscape becomes clearer to us. So I guess I'm seeking that kind of assurance from Kim and Diane and Laura and Ryan to know that both financially and planning wise that we as a district and a board have the ability to continue to, Kim, you use the term rudderless, to change course as needed and change direction and do what we need to do. Is that, am I right on that? Because that's kind of what I'm operating under when I make these decisions.
You're absolutely right. We will continue to adjust. We do not know what August will bring, right? So part of what we are doing is trying to be planned and give forethought so that we're not caught on our heels, no matter the situation that we're in. So I firmly believe that some of the conversations we had in January, February, et cetera, helped us to be able to implement a strong closing procedure so that students could be learning right away. So I think it behooves us to do the same for reopening. Yes, flexibility will definitely be part of it.
I got insurance from you as well. So you just said anything.
From a budget standpoint, if I could just jump in really quick, Alan, is, you know, well, the reason why we really need the board to kind of approve the LCAP, at least from a draft standpoint, and yes, lots of it can change between now and December, is personnel costs and putting people into positions right now. So those are the things that we need to make decisions on. You know, are we going to have the TOSA positions? Are we going to have the iInnovate? Are we going to have elementary counselors? Are we going to have, you know, the LCAP has a lot of things that, you know, we take for granted in terms of, you know, all of our EL courses that we have at our schools, our AVID classes, so there's so much of it that's personnel dependent that it's really important for us to at least get that part of the LCAP, you know, semi-approved by the board tonight so that we can move forward. But then the other, I mean, there's millions of dollars of things that can be adapted and changed between now and December, such as, you know, professional development and, you know, if and again, what we found from the closing until now is that if we go virtual, it will be much cheaper because we don't have substitute costs. We don't have other, you know, costs associated with normal school running that goes away. So, you know, there is flexibility, I guess is my point in terms of the future, but it's really tonight, I think it's important, or today, that at least from a personnel standpoint, that we, you know, that we just wanted to make sure that the board was okay with us moving on with those personnel decisions.
Thank you. All right. I have Chris, then Mark, then Evelyn.
Thanks. So I have to say that I am going to support the LCAP preliminary built capillary plan for the reasons that Mr. Pinkerton has been talking about, and also because what it does is I think it sets us on a course to provide the personnel to do the social emotional learning that we're talking about. However, Mrs. Frame, I am sensitive to what you're saying, and I think what you were talking about was how do we provide the social emotional supports that our students are going to need, understanding that we can't ignore the academic piece because everything I read says there's a huge concern about academic loss. But we've got kids, we've got staff coming back after a long hiatus. This is going to be a tremendous change for a lot of people. No matter what we do, it's going to be a change. How do we get people ready for that change? How do we thread that needle, right? I think that's my concern, and I'd like to know more about that because we can't ignore the academics, but certainly we can't ignore the social emotional piece. And thinking about staff, we don't know what our staffing is going to be like in the fall. We don't know who's going to be able to teach what. We don't know if we have staff that are going to be in high risk groups who are going to say, because of my age, because of a condition that I have, I'm not going to be able to teach face to face. So I think those are issues that we're going to need to face ourselves. And I guess I need to hear more about that as well.
All right, Mark, then, and then Catherine, we got you. I've got Mark, Evelyn, then Catherine.
Thanks. Just an incredible amount of work that staff's doing and just getting slammed and doing stuff three different plans to come back in. I'm listening to this discussion and I'm with Chris. I would support the LCAP plan. My concern is what I'm hearing is that we've got a dual adoption that we're being asked, and that's to adopt the budget on the same night that we're adopting an LCAP plan, which has not been adapted. Staff over the past few years has done an incredible job of letting the LCAP and curriculum drive the budget. And it's been a process. LCAP, budget, Ryan and I'm guessing Kimberly working great together. My fear is that the budget tonight may not reflect everything that we need in that launch plan and what I'm seeing in the LCAP. So I'm throwing that out. It feels to me as if we need that LCAP before we can make a final decision on the budget, and we do have 2 weeks in which we can do that. So it's a concern I have. Thanks.
Thank you. Evelyn?
Oh, I'm going to go ahead and let Mrs. Rogers speak up before, if that's okay.
Or, sorry. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Okay. I hope our teachers know that we are concerned about their and emotional health as well. And so I think part of what we're talking here is about, are we supportive of what we know that is an incredibly stressful period that we're going to be facing, that they're going to be on the receiving end of much of the demands that are necessary to help our students get back in the swing of things. So I just want to make sure that our teachers know that, you know, we don't take this for granted and we are there for them. And, we want to support them, as to the best of our ability as we go forward with the decisions we have to make tonight.
Thank you. Evelyn?
I'm sorry. So I guess for me, I tonight, as it's presented, I cannot support, you know, this plan or the budget. Just because it of the concerns that I have regarding particularly the academic support launch. I think that is, even though I know one of our priorities is accelerating the achievement of the closing gap, we have a lot to find out before and in the process. And I would hate for this to take priority over staff really practicing protocols. I mean, it's going to be a lot different for staff for those protocols that they're, because their natural inclination is going to do one thing and they're going to have to actually physically practice other types of protocol. And so this focus, when I look on, you know, the August assessments and I see that, to me seems an unrealistic plan. And it really says to our staff, oh, this will be your focus. So we're, while we may support our staff, we're actually telling them something else by what we put in plan. And so, I mean, I feel really bad about this, but it is just, you know, I just can't support it currently. So.
Thank you. Right. This, Mr. Unger, and then Mrs. Roger.
So my question I have is, are we being asked to approve the launch plan, or are we being asked to approve the LCAP? My understanding, my belief is that we're being asked to approve the LCAP, and that the launch plan is a work in progress. So could someone help me with that and actually help me understand what this agenda item is approving or not approving?
It's my understanding. Oh, go ahead, Kim.
Sorry. I understand it the same way, Chris. We were just presenting the academic launch plan, and then I was going to go over some of the preliminary LCAP next and ask for your approval so that we can continue moving forward. We'll bring the official LCAP for your approval after we know what we've dealt with in August. Come November, December, we'll bring back the official LCAP in November, December for your approval. So but the presentation of the launch plan.
And I see where you're going, Chris. That's really, thank you. These two are appearing sort of smushed together. So today we are being asked to just approve the preliminary LCAP. That's all.
Correct.
Thank you. So these kind of became pushed together a little bit in a way that I can see how it makes it a little challenging to clarify that. So Marilyn, you had something?
Yeah, I too was a little confused by the squishy nature of the launch plan getting mixed up with the LCAP and what were we really going for here. It seems to me, you know, the LCAP says to the state, this is what we plan to do to address the needs of our at-risk students, our ELs, our SEDs, our foster homeless youth. And it's a fluid document in order to serve those needs, you know, and we may move in fits and starts through the LCAP. If we're going down a path that seems like it's not working, then, you know, there is flexibility within that plan to change and to move. And it is our general fund monies that we are applying to the LCAP. What we're telling the state is, this is how we intend to use this chunk of general fund monies to address the needs of these students. We're not wed to that amount of money. If we need more, we can take more general fund money. But in so doing, then we have to ask ourselves, what are we willing to give up in order to do that? Because our monies are, for the most part, totally allocated and primarily allocated to personnel costs. So I don't see that in approving this LCAP that we're tying our hands as, you know, as a district or a board. I think we're saying this is the big idea. This is how we plan to address these issues going forward, knowing that if we're not achieving results, we're going to manipulate, move around. We're going to we're going to be flexible within this document. Am I understanding that correctly, Mrs. McGrath?
You are.
That was really well said, Marilyn. Thank you.
So then I have no problem approving this as a preliminary LCAP.
Ms. Ellen and then Chris.
Okay. But the state, and I understand the concern about being rudderless, but the state did make this a one-year LCAP plan. And so my concern is that, you know, we did do a lot of preliminary stuff before closure. And while this is incredibly robust, more robust than, you know, any of the surrounding districts, you know, it is, you know, I will say that it continue. I do think it locks us in. We're adopting it. It's going to lock us in with personnel. It's going to lock us in job descriptions and all of that. And while I think we do need to give, you know, I don't know how to address that, Dr. Prater or, you know, Mrs. McGrath, because we don't know what our staffing is going to look like. We don't know what teachers and so we're, you know, we are kind of locking ourselves in by adopting this when the state says, by the way, this is a one-year plan and you do not have to adopt it because we expect you to be flexible. We expect needs to change. And so, you know, we're lucky because we can take this on at a much greater degree because of who we are. I do think that the state, you know, I don't always agree with the state, but there is some wisdom because we won't know. And so how can we, you know, for me, I'm not going to be able to approve it unless I know that those things are addressed. So we can go ahead and vote. I'm so sorry.
No, this is what this is all about.
Board discussion.
Mr. Underwood.
Well, like I said, I am going to support the approval of the LCAP plan, but I do believe that Mrs. Frame has brought up some concerns that I think need to be addressed in the launch plan, and I'd like to see those brought back to the board with more detail, considering some of the things that she's talked about.
So, Mr. Mayfield?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, as we have worked through, like you brought up before, Evelyn, this process started a long time ago. Everything has been put through the lens of how are we going to support teachers with the needs that they have come fall. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, teachers are going to be faced with a situation like they've never been faced with before. And being the incredible dynamic group that we have in San Luis Coastal, they're going to be chomping at the bit to help, you know, kids to recover and get back up to speed educationally. And everything in this plan is focused on providing support so that teachers can do that important work. It is absolutely not going to be, here's another layer of, you know, things that we're going to ask you to do. It was all designed through the lens of how can we support teachers to do the work that they need to do to get kids back up to speed. And so we will absolutely be able to pivot and change and design our program around the needs that we see come fall and depending on the situation that we're faced with come fall. We will not be locking personnel into positions and job descriptions right now that we cannot adjust in August. So we're simply putting together a team in this preliminary LCAP that's going to give us the person power to meet this challenge of a fall like we've never seen before. And I think that teachers overall in our district are going to be very appreciative of the fact that we have these resources and this team of people together, you know, with a plan and some forethought into how we can support, you know, kids in classrooms to be successful. We know social emotionally kids are going to come in very differently and staff is going to come in very differently than it has. And of course, we'll take that into consideration. But this is a robust plan with a lot of support for teachers in the classroom. And that includes figuring out where kids are at academically and then adjusting our teaching and interventions and support accordingly. And so I think I absolutely hear what Mrs. Frame is saying. And I agree, those are great questions that we should be asking ourselves. But I want to reassure you that it absolutely went through that lens of how can we support teachers and students in this, you know, unprecedented time in the fall. And I think this LCAP does that, and I think it gives us plenty of flexibility and make adjustments depending on the needs that we see come on.
Thank you. Mark. So just to be clear, we actually, this agenda topic indicates the LCAP discussion and the launch plan. So Kim, are we going to have, now that LCAP, are you going to talk about that separately?
I would love to if you still have time for that.
Yeah, I think that may have been part of the confusion also. The first item listed was the LCAP goals, and then the second item on the way it's on board docs is presenting the launch plan. So I completely understand how it all kind of has flowed together here, and now let's tease them apart so that we can be clear on what it is we're voting to approve today. Thank you.
Sounds good. So the preliminary LCAP, we've discussed it now. I think this is our third time. So if you picture that long, colorful document was the first item that we looked at, which had really extensive input, a lot before the closure and then also some understanding what we're dealing with now. I would say that a few things to keep in mind is, as we started touching on, this is preliminary, right? This is just providing some of that direction so that we can get some things started. There is still lots of wiggle room depending on what we're dealing with. But this provides a framework. This provides a structure. It does have academic expectations. It does have the need for support, a tremendous amount, as Mr. Mayfield said, of support for teachers, and also acknowledging the social emotional needs of our students. So we really believe that with that balance, kids will be able to thrive. So a couple of pieces I want to just bring to your attention is, when you look at focus area number one, think about instructional strategy focus. Think about the academic planning needed based on the fact that we have unfinished learning, and we're going to need to be able to address that in a uniform fashion. We've had surveys going out to teachers to say, let's talk to us about what have you seen? What was taught? What was not taken to mastery? And let's gather that information from you so that we can address those needs for students. When you look at the support model, you have additional supports in place for our Title I schools, right? You have MTSS teachers on special assignment that will have a focus on the needs where we know there's a high percentage of students that are likely going to have more needs. And so it gives that support to those schools while also creating a district-wide framework for what that support for teachers looks like. A few of the things we also mentioned are kind of improving that learning from best practices from our distance learning model. All three of the plans have a distance learning component. So taking time to learn from what we've done in the spring and continue to improve that, as well as increases to co-teaching. In the third area, you'll notice we've mentioned some of these, but two additional months for our Family Resource Center. So as we have been helping families that are coming to us with really help with basic needs, we're adding to those 2 months so that they continue to serve the needs of those students. Increasing MFT, as we talked about, around $125,000 expense. The great part of that is that that helps address every single school. Each school will see an increase so that we're helping to address the needs, especially the therapeutic needs, across all of our sites. An increase in days for our school counselors, also to help address that, as well as unified lessons for all elementary schools for SEL, and then looking at plans of what does that look like as well for secondary schools. So I think you'll see in this preliminary LCAP a balance of a big picture, long-term view of what are we doing for our socioeconomically disadvantaged EL and foster homeless youth, also trying to run through that lens of what supports are going to be needed because of these closures. And you'll see the academic launch plan elements embedded within the LCAP and funded that way. absolutely flexibility, and we'll bring back this discussion, and we'll bring back the LCAP, formal LCAP for your approval, as we've said, for December. So this afternoon, I would appreciate your approval of the preliminary LCAP so we can continue to move forward in supporting our teachers.
Thank you. So for discussion, anything further, or we get it all sorted out in our last piece? All right, then. This is an approval item. We need a vote, a motion, and a second to approve the preliminary LCAP.
Mrs. Sheffer, I don't believe we've gone to the public yet.
Well, we went to the public on the item as a whole, but since we're doing it, is there anyone? Okay, there is no one, so we'll come back for a vote at this time. Is there anyone who'd like to make a motion, Mr. Unger?
I'll make that motion to approve the preliminary LCAP.
Thank you. Dr. Eisenjath Rogers, you're seconding?
Yes.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by Dr. Eisenjath Rogers. We'll go through our vote. Mr. Buckman?
Aye.
Dr. Eisenjath Rogers?
Aye.
Ms. Frain?
No.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
And I vote yes as well. So this passes 5 ayes, 1 no, and Mr. Millar is absent. All right, thank you. So our next item is approval of the 2020-2021 budget.
Yeah, so I'm going to start it off by just giving a quick background, if it's okay, Ms. Sheffer, and then Julie Lane's going to walk through the presentation, and then I will present the 10-year budget, if that's okay.
Sure.
So just kind of a quick update for the board, you know, and again, I've said this lots of times, right, over the past few weeks and months as we've entered this, is the unprecedented times, right, in terms of the pandemic, its effect on taxes, its effect on, you know, economy, effect on local governments and spending. So normally in January for the past, you know, 8 years of the, you know, kind of the economy doing well, we would get the governor's budget update in January and, you know, maybe a few little changes in May. And then they now, by law, have to pass the budget by June 15th, right? So that people can plan, move forward, and kind of go in the direction that they want. Well, this year, of course, major change, right? So all of the things the governor wanted to do in January were kind of off the table then at the May revise when he brought his May revise forward. And then what happens after the May revise is then the state Senate and Assembly get together, and they come up with their own plans. And so it's been really interesting over the past week. Both bodies have come up with plans that basically take away all of the cuts. And so those two plans by both the Senate and the Assembly really rely on the hope that they receive federal dollars. And if they don't, there's this huge kind of shell game that happens where basically they, you know, we'll pay you next year for the money that we say we're going to give you this year, type of thing. So with the hope then that 2-3 years from now, the economy picks up, things are better, and they're able to make up those deferral payments long term. So, you know, we've always, over the past few years with the LCAP, have brought the budget with the LCAP because it is so connected. Both of them are connected. Now, that said, even if we brought it to our next board meeting in June, we still wouldn't know really the final details of what the governor's budget's going to have. So it's, you know, when after they approve the budget in June, it takes a few weeks for us to kind of figure out what everything means and what the actual impacts are, what's going to happen. And that's why they have a process called the 45-day revise, where we then go back, look at the board adopted budget, we make the adjustments that we need to do. And that's something that this year will be something that we'll share and focus on more with the board than we've really done in the past, because it really hasn't made that much of a change. There hasn't been that much of a change in June. But this year there could be either very close to what we put into the budget, which is the 10% reduction in a lot of areas, or there might be this chance that, you know, all those reductions are taken away because of this deferral process. So that's something that, again, we will work on, move forward with. So I just wanted to give you that kind of backdrop that, again, it changes, right? The only time we really know what our budget is that unaudited actual September. And it's for the year before, right? It's not for the current year. It's the year before. My job would be really easy, to be quite honest with you, if we didn't spend money, right? If we were super conservative and cut back and waited to see kind of a year in arrears what our property taxes were, and that's what our plan would be, like, you know, my job would be really easy, right? So, but that's not how it works, because when that happened in the past in our district, it makes people, you know, feel like we're hiding money, right? That we're, you know, having these large ending balances in September and having cut programs the year before, things like that, causes issues. So that said, you know, we do have to be conservative in a lot of ways, right? So we have to kind of project, see where we're at, make adjustments as it goes. And this is going to be one of those years where we are going to have to make adjustments as the year progresses, based on what we learn from the state, based on what our spending patterns are. We have been had foresight, right, this year with the pandemic and the closing of schools, that we stopped all spending that wasn't essential. And so you'll see tonight the bottom line then has grown significantly because of that decision, which is going to help us next year should we need to, you know, deficit spend for a year. The CARES Act funding, which is about $600,000, which Julie, you know, is in the 10-year, but not in the current budget, because we didn't know for sure when we were putting the budget together about what the CARES Act is going to be. And honestly, we still don't know, and we won't know until June 15th what that impact is. But we're expected to get about $600,000, 560, 570, something about that, which pretty much makes up the deficit that you're going to see tonight with the budget presented. And so you'll see some of those aspects. And again, I'm going to have Julie now go through the presentation of the budget with you, kind of explain some of the things. And then I will come back and talk about the 10-year as well. So we can take questions now if you want to, just on that first part, if you want.
Just, Ellen, is that okay? I'm Ryan, my system cut out just right at the very end about covering deficits, and I didn't hear that whole statement.
Yeah, you know, the board tonight, that we're asking the board to approve a budget, which I think is about a little $550,000 deficit. And I just want you to know that we're not, you know, the CARES Act funding is not included in the budget. And that's not just because we didn't have the information at the time, but a lot of it's going to change from now until June 15th. It could be a lot better than the budget we're presenting. If the Assembly and Senate plan goes forward and we don't have 10% cut on all those things, we might be in a better, you know, spot than we are currently moving forward. So we'll see what happens with that. But that CARES Act funding basically makes up, Mr. Buckman, for that that deficit that you see tonight. We just didn't include it at the time because it was just, the information was just coming out. The state had just released the preliminary numbers. We have included it in the 10-year budget, but we'll go through those details as we talk about the presentation.
Thank you.
So, Julie, you're up. And Mandy, if you'll pull up the budget presentation, that'd be great. We don't want to talk about the launch plan.
No, I don't want to talk about that. Can you hear me?
Yes.
We got you.
Okay. Well, good afternoon. So as Ryan said, our budget is always a living document. It changes all the time. There's always new information that we receive from the state and the feds and local that changes our budget, and that's part of the reason you have a fiscal services staff, so we can keep on top of those things and keep on top of what's happening in the budget. This budget, probably even more than normal, we're going to see probably changes. There's probably changes happening right now as we're speaking. So we will present a 45-day revise and let you know what changes are in the actual adopted state budget. And then, of course, at first interim, we do a real thorough look at all the expenditure categories and revenue categories, and we'll have, by then we'll have our carryovers posted, and things will look probably very different at first interim than they do now. But going forward, this is what we know at the time we built this budget. Mandy, if you could scroll to the next slide, please. Thank you. So first of all, with the budget, we also look at our current year budget. So as of May 22nd, we did some revisions to our budget and tried to align things a little bit and reduce expenses that we didn't think were going to be spent. And so our beginning balance was $16,512,000 approximately. We're estimating our revenues and transfers in, which is the transfers from other funds, at $105,382,000. We're estimating our expenses that are still budgeted at $104,562,000, which would give us a surplus at the end of the year of about $820,000, leaving us an ending balance of $17,331,000. And we will go on the next slide. We won't go there yet, but we'll discuss how that's also going to increase probably by the end of the year. In the projected budget, then, we take that ending balance from this year. That'll be our projected beginning balance for next year. And we estimate our revenues at $102,380,000, and that does not include carryover accounts, so that amount is going to change. We're estimating our expenses at $102,937,000, which gives us a deficit at the year end of $557,922, bringing our balance down to $16,773,000. And I do want to mention that if any of you printed this up, I had to make a change today. One of the numbers in here was wrong, so make sure you're looking at the one on the screen. So let's go to the next slide, and we can talk about how this ending balance is probably going to be much bigger than this. So every year, you're probably tired of hearing this, but every year we have amounts that we currently have in the budget that are probably not going to be spent. And because this year, because of the school closures, there's probably even going to be more carryover than normal. When we look at our carryover accounts, we've got different types of carryover accounts. We've got our general fund unrestricted discretionary budgets. These are often donations for specific things. We have our catastrophic leave balances. We have money that we've collected for books and, various things that we keep in the general fund, the donations being the largest one. And we think that by the end of the year, we're probably not going to spend about $400,000 of this because there are still balances in these accounts. And the reason we don't reduce these in the budget is because it makes it hard at the end of the year to track exactly what our carryover is. It's much easier if we can see this is how much we started with, this is how much we spent, and this is how much we're going to carry over to the next year. So I don't really like reducing those budgets, even though I don't think we're going to spend them. And then we also have restricted ending balances, and these are usually in specific categorical accounts. So right now in our lottery fund, we're probably going to have about $60,000 we won't spend. In EPA, that Education Protection Act account, we have $83,000. Normally we would move another teacher salary and benefits in there to use that up, but this year it's been so uncertain. We've heard a lot of rumors about possibly not getting funded for EPA or not getting our fourth quarter apportionment, so we decided let's just leave it there and we'll use it next year. Medi-Cal billing still has about $190,000 we don't think we'll spend. Restricted lottery, $120,000, and the other two classified employees and lowest performing students. So the total there is about 663,000. And this would be carryover that's going to increase our ending balance, but then it's going to be budgeted and expensed again next year from the ending balance, because this is revenue that's already been accounted for. So it won't be budgeted in revenue, only in expense. Now on the unearned revenue accounts, these are accounts where we do reduce both revenue and expense when they're not spent. So it won't have any effect on the ending balance, but these are amounts that we currently have in the budget in both revenue and expense that will probably be reduced. So Title I, Title II, Title III, Title IV, we're going to have over $200,000 that's going to be reduced out of revenue and expense and moved into the next year. We have some CTIG funds, which we'll probably need for next year because that's one of the programs they're talking about cutting. Our Ed Foundation grants, you know, they didn't have a chance to spend those before school closure, so those will be moved into next year. We have PEG funding that comes from the city, and 24-hour relay is still spending down some money that they had in our account. Okay, next slide, Mandy. Thank you. So included with our revenues in this budget, we have a 3% property tax increase estimated. Little uncertain about that because this year's actually didn't even go up 3%, but there was that one-time assessment of PG&E that we don't think is going to happen again next year, so we think we're pretty comfortable that 3% is reasonable. We have reduced certain programs by 10% based on the May revise, and these would be the minimum state aid accounts, which includes that old categorical fund, the EPA account, and our mandated costs. I actually think that some of those are not going to get reduced, but better, I guess, to estimate low than too high. Our PG&E mitigation revenue, that SB 1090, is budgeted. That's about $2 million less than we got this year because we got 2 years worth this year. The governor was nice enough to give us that special ed preschool intervention money this year, but we're not going to get it next year. That's about $870,000 that we got last year and are not going to get next year. The CTE programs seem to be the ones that were hit the hardest in the May revise, so those have been reduced by 50%, and we'll wait and see what comes out in the final budget. Adult Ed Block Grant was also reduced. We have about a 33% reduction in the budget, although I think it looks like it might be a little bit better news than that. As you may recall, that MOU with Coast and Cayucas started at about, I think, 22% the first year, and then last year was 56%, and this year, this coming year, we're going to have 100% of that revenue. That should be about $1 million. We don't budget for donations or billing in revenue or expense, and our, as I said, our deferred revenues or unearned revenues will be carried over to the next year after we have unaudited actuals, and they'll be exact amounts. And our special ed revenues are always budgeted based on the county office estimates, and that one is also a little bit uncertain because the governor is increasing the special ed-based funding, but maybe not as much as we originally thought. So we'll keep you posted on that one, too. Next slide, please. Okay, so our revenue sources currently, our property taxes are making up about 78% of our total revenues. Our other LCFF are those things like the Education Protection Act, the minimum state aid accounts, transfers to adult ed, the payments to the charter schools, and the special ed property taxes. Federal revenues, we have budgeted about 3% right now. That's not including carryovers. State revenue at 2%. The state STIRS on behalf is about 4%, so that's budgeted in both revenue and expense. It doesn't have, it's only on paper, and it doesn't affect the ending balance. And our local revenues right now are budgeted at about 7%. So once we start getting our billing accounts and our donations and other revenues in, that property tax percentage may go down a little bit, but right now it stands at 78%. Next slide, please. So this is probably a familiar graph. We have been trying to keep track of where we are compared to other districts around us. And so this year is the first year that that LCFS amount hasn't been sort of catching up to our basic aid amounts. You can see in 11-12 there was quite a gap there between the blue and the green line, the blue line being the LCF sources per ADA that we actually get, which includes property taxes, and the state-funded LCFS, or at that time it was revenue limit. And you can see that that amount kind of crept up and was getting closer to matching the blue line, not quite, but then next year it's going to drop back down. And assuming that that there isn't any COLA for the next 3 years, then it'll stay low, and we'll continue, hopefully, getting increases in our property taxes. Next slide, please. On the expenditure side, we've included step and column increases and a 2% raise for this year. The STRS and PERS rates went down, which is really good news. So the STRS rate is at 6.15%, which is down from last year, which was 17.1%, but it's what was supposed to be in the current year budget was, I think, 18.1% in STRS, so that's almost 2% reduction there. And the PERS rate went from 19.72 last year. This year it's going to be 20.7, but originally it was going to be 22.86% this year. So the total savings just from this is about $1.3 million. So that was very good news for us. Health and welfare right now is budgeted with a 1% increase. We had a little reprieve from the big increases we've been getting from that. Of course, we'll always look at that at first interim, because that's when, after open enrollment, everything will be adjusted because people will be on new plans. We've adjusted our positions based on enrollment projections. If you read through the narrative, I think we're down about a little under 3 positions for certificated staff. Site allocations are budgeted, as we always do, at 90% of the, I should say, 2019 CBEDs, and will be adjusted to 2020 CBEDs to 100% of their allocations. Sorry about that. And then, as you discussed earlier, the LCAP expenses have been budgeted based on the preliminary plan, and we needed to budget something in there because we know we're going to have expenses, and we're going to have to continue paying people and doing things. So we kind of needed that preliminary plan in order to get a budget in place for these things. And again, the carryover amounts will be budgeted in the expense side after an audit of actuals as well. Next slide, please. So our total salaries in this budget make up about 86% of both the revenue and the expenditure amount. Again, once we start getting carryover amounts and other things budgeted in here, that may go down a little bit, but it is creeping up a little compared to prior years, so we need to keep our eye on that. Our employee benefits are at 22%, which was exactly what it was last year because of those reductions in the STRS and PERS rates, I think, helped us a lot. And then we have, certificated salaries is at 37%. Classified salaries at 18. We have administrative salaries always around 5%. With the STRS on behalf and the expenditure side is 4% of our expense budget. We budget 4% in books and supplies. We have 9% in services and other operating expenses, which includes things like contracted services, field trips, conferences, utilities, it's kind of a catch-all. And then we don't have very much budgeted right now in capital outlay. We'll see where we are when we close the year, and then we'll probably budget some things for necessary replacements at that time. And then a little bit budgeted in other outgoing transfers out, which includes things like what we pay the county office to serve our special ed kids, and we make a transfer to food services if they have a deficit, things like that. Next slide, please. Okay, so here's the LCAP budget that we budgeted. So we had from 5, we went down to 3 different focus areas. We currently have about a little over $1 million budgeted in the general fund. We have about $4.5 million in supplemental. We've got $921,000 in other resources for a total amount that we have currently budgeted as $6.5 million. And as you already talked about, the LCAPs can be evaluated and adjusted at the same time we're reporting our first interim, which will be brought to the board in December. So this will be aligned with the actual LCAP that is approved by the board at that time. Next slide, please, Mandy. Just to keep up to date with our special ed funding, federal funds cover only about 8.3% of our total special ed costs. Our state funds cover about 20.4%, local funds cover 68.9%, and other district contracts, which is the contracts of other districts in the county whose students we serve, are about 2.4%. The governor's May revise included an increase to the special ed base rate at $645 per student, which for San Luis Coastal, based on what the county office estimates were, would be about an increase of $600,000 for us, which is great. Just heard recently, though, that it might not be quite that much, so that might go down a little bit. And you can see on the graph above that even though that $600,000 seems like it's a lot of money, it's a pretty small amount on that blue line compared to the green line that continues going up because we're serving more students and things are costing more. Next slide, please. And this is something, this is one of those things we just have to do because it's in Ed Code. So Ed Code 42127 requires districts to identify the minimum recommended reserve for economic uncertainties, the amount of reserves exceeding the minimum reserve level, and explain the excess reserve level. So if we were at our minimum reserve level by state mandated requirements, our minimum reserve for economic uncertainty would be a little over $3 million. Now, the board has wisely said we should make that 10% of our expenditures. So down at the bottom of the assigned balances, you'll see that the board has authorized an additional 7% reserve for economic uncertainty. So that 7.2 plus the 3 million is currently our reserve for economic uncertainties. In addition to that, we have that adult ed balance. That's about $400,000. We have our instructional materials realignment that we hold in our reserves. That's about $1.5 million. And we always keep our lottery balances 1 year in arrears. So that's $1,143,000. So the total assigned balances are $10,252,000. Our unassigned balance is currently $2.7 million. So our reserves in excess of the minimum are about $13 million right now. And if we only kept 3% in reserves, that would only cover about one half of 1 month's salary benefits. So you can see that's really not enough to keep in reserves for economic uncertainties. Next slide, please. Next slide, please, Mandy. There we go. Okay, now we're on the 10-year budget. I'll turn it over to Ryan or take questions now, whatever you'd prefer.
Why don't we start with questions for Julie, if that's okay, Ms. Shepherd.
Okay, questions for Julie. I show Chris and then Mark.
Just a couple of things, Julie, that for anybody who's listening that might not understand this. My recollection is that one of the reasons we have such a large gap between what our revenue limit, our LCAP money would be and our actual revenues is because our per pupil funding is actually one among the lowest in the county. That not every school district gets the same amount of money per pupil. and that when the formulas were created years and years ago, when I first got on the board, I believe we were about 10th out of 11th in terms of per pupil funding in the county. So first question, Julie, is that still accurate?
I think you're thinking when we were revenue limit, that was true. When the state would give funding to districts based on the revenue limit, it was a different calculation and everybody was at different levels. And yes, we were very low funded at that time had we been a revenue limit district. With the LCFF, the base revenue limit is this, or now I'm talking about revenue limit. The base LCFF is the same for all districts. The only variable now is the concentration and the supplemental grants, which are based on your EL and low socioeconomic and foster homeless youth. So that can vary based on your percentage of those students, but the LCFF base is the same across the board for all districts now. I think that was part of Governor Brown's plan, as he wanted to make it a little bit more fair.
Great. Thank you. That helps clarify it for me. And the other thing I just think we should really make sure people understand is the importance of keeping our reserves. I guess we're about a fire away from spending all that money. And I just want to remind people how important that is. Julie, I think you talked about less than about a month or so of our salaries and benefits. And just that it's one-time money, and once it's spent, it's spent. So it's really important that we have that money, I think especially now with the murky economic conditions that we're facing. So thank you.
Yes, thank you. I agree. Actually, there was something that came out recently that apparently the rest of the state of California only requires a 3% reserve, but I believe the rest of the country requires more like a 17% reserve. So ours is actually a little bit lower. We actually have about 17% in reserve over and above what the state recommends. But yeah, the 3% is pretty low.
Mark, you had something now?
Yeah, if I can. First of all, I want to thank Julie for spending some time on the phone with me both yesterday when she was out with her family down in LA. And I realized that we got off the phone, I hope. But also today, she's just great at helping me understand this stuff. I've got several questions, and I try not to do them all right now, I guess. When I talked earlier about the LCAP, I spent some time looking just at books and supplies as I went through there's three different versions of the budget. So there's the state's year projections, there's Ryan's 10-year projection, and then there's the actual budget that we present to the state. A little confusing. But it looks like, when I looked at it, that we actually are planning to spend less money on books and supplies. This is just a small part of the budget, but I want to use it as an example. Even though the LCAP is calling for, I think it's calling for increased spending on books and supplies. And so I had some confusion over that, and that's why I talked earlier about we didn't have an LCAP to build this budget. And so I have some concerns about that. I'm a little bit concerned, and Ryan, if you can help me, did we get a one-year waiver on having two meetings on the budget, or is that just forever now? We used to have two public hearings on the budget. Is it now?
That was because of the LCAP. That wasn't necessarily the budget itself. It was just an LCAP function where they made you do the LCAP twice.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dr. Prater always likes to have everything be as transparent as possible. So we would have the budget conversation along with those meetings, knowing that the LCAP had such an impact on the budget.
I appreciate that. But in the past, did we have two public hearings on the budget, or two meetings on the budget traditionally?
There was just one public hearing. We had multiple meetings on the budget, mainly along with the LCAP.
Okay, great. Thanks. It's just becoming so apparent to me that I was naive about the impact of the carryover funds, and how much they're going to impact. So traditionally over the years, do we know roughly a dollar amount of what we carry over? So then you'll know in about 45 days when you close out.
We won't know the exact amount until an audited actual, which won't be until August.
Right.
But we usually have about over $1 million that we carry over between all the restricted accounts and the unrestricted accounts.
Okay.
And this year we're thinking it's going to be even more.
This year you think it's more. Yeah. That's great news. Okay.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. So when it comes back, so the board approves a budget, which is like probably one of the, if not the most important thing we do. When in 45 days, how does that money that's now the $1 million just roughly that we carry every year, how does that get assigned to budget categories?
You're talking about the carryover budget or the carryover amount?
Yes, please.
So the amounts that carry over have a specific purpose. So we keep, for instance, the discretionary codes in the general fund, they all have a specific code that tells us exactly what's in there. And we have restricted resources. We have unrestricted resources. Everything has a code associated with it. So we can keep our focus on those codes to know what those balances are going to be. And then we close those out. We keep track and we move those balances over into the current year.
So none of,
after an audit,
but some of it too,
all the expenses.
Some of it too, Mark, is just unappropriated.
Right.
So if our reserves grow, basically, is what happens, right? So you'll see on the bottom of Julie where she's broken out the 3% reserve, 10% reserve, and then at the very bottom there's this unassigned amount.
Right.
So that can grow. That unassigned amount can grow in September when we have unaudited actuals.
So for the last, I think the last 2 years we've been deficits. Showing a deficit budget.
In your annual budget.
Right.
But that's why we love that 10-year budget, right, which shows the actual amount that we project is going to really come to the bottom line.
Okay. And the 10-year projection, which I don't want to jump the gun on that, but it's based on an estimate of property tax revenue, correct?
An estimate on all budget categories, both expenditure and revenue.
Okay, but by and large, the largest is the 3% property tax.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, 70, almost 80%.
78% of the budget, revenues.
Yeah, and so my question is, we started out, I think, early discussions this year at 3%, 2.5%. We're down now to 3%. I'm a little scared of what's coming down the pike. I'm just not sure that we're going to see 3% growth in the community, and I don't know how to deal with that as a budgeting factor. We came down to 0.5%. So at some point I'd like to know what that number looks like. So we came down 0.5%. How did that affect the budget? Not necessarily do that right now. So let me just tie that to the, so we estimate property taxes and we know our normal carryover, but we budget based on the estimated property taxes, but we don't include in the budget an estimated carryover. So I have some confusing thoughts on that, but I'm mostly scared about continuing with a deficit budget adoption, and I'm most concerned about pinning our hopes on a 3% property tax.
Can I address this carryover?
I know you would.
One reason we don't budget the carryover in the budget side of things is because it's still budgeted in this year. So it would almost be double budgeted then, because it's still budgeted in 1920.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes sense.
Okay.
It's just a weird, it's one of those things where it's just a weird process, right, where we have to approve something before we actually know what it's going to be. And that's just the way the system is set up. It's the way it's established. I mean, think of all the districts right now that are having to base their budgets in the state on a 10% cut to the LCFF, or people, in terms of where they're at right now. And that could change dramatically, on June 15th and into the summer. So, that's the part that I think the board needs to understand is it's like Julie said, it's a working document, right? This is not the final budget. Ultimately, it's the final budget's unaudited actuals, right? I mean, and the weird thing about the budget that we have to send to the state at first interim, second interim, it assumes that you spend every penny you put in it as expenditures. So that's why oftentimes, like at last first interim and second interim, it showed our district having a deficit budget. The board received a letter from the county saying that we couldn't meet our three-year goals, right? Well, I'm going to show you in the 10-year budget that we're going to have over $2 million fall to the bottom line this year.
But that's, yeah.
So it's just this, it's a fluid process, right? Again, we could, as a board, you could be much more conservative if you wanted to, and we could cut down on spending and kind of go that route part of it. But, you know, we've been, you know, and again, we may have to do that next year. If you look at the 10-year budgets, we talk about it, we may, you know, depending on where property taxes come out, if we have another year of under 3%, then that's something we'll have to, you know, look at and adjust, right? So it's almost, you know, living through this year and making adjustments for the future, you know, as we go. So that's, it's just an unknown. This year in particular was weird. Remember that huge reassessment by PG&E, a $2 million property tax cut in unitary tax. Actual property tax increases were like over 5%, like 5.3%.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
It was because the unitary tax cut that our property tax value went from 5.3% down to 2.4%. So we'll see, you know, kind of where that happens. Now, again, I don't trust it. People appreciating the plant. You know, there's no expectation of 5% property tax increases. Okay. I think we're going to lose unitary tax. But we also, you know, thanks to Jordan Cunningham and Bill Moeing, have SB 1090 funds, right, which are super important, have got us to this point, right, of these extra funds over the next few years. And so that's another thing, Mr. Buckman, that we have to realize those are going to phase out over time. So
right.
We do need to be watching that 10-year and kind of looking at that long-term, because we are living on some extra funds right now.
Okay. And so I appreciate it, and I get how hard it is. And I had to share my concern, but I also have to tell you, I have not seen such socially and medically challenging times for this country, and it scares me. Mm-hmm. And I want to just make sure our kids are taken care of.
I get it.
Thank you.
Anyone else at this time? I know Ryan, you, thank you, Julie, wherever you are.
Yeah, just
welcome. I'm sorry, I'm not on. I can't, my video's not working apparently.
So Ryan, did you have?
So just lastly, you know, we've made some adjustments to the 10-year budget. You know, in terms of looking at revenues, like Mr. Buckman said, we did a 3% out from this year all the way through 28, 29, right, which has dramatic effects, because that 0.5% is a lot of money, right, year over year, in terms of, you know, it's kind of exponential, right, when you take a percentage down to 3%. You know, my hope is that things will be better, and we'll see in December kind of where we're at with that. But we've always known, right, that there has been kind of a long-term potential deficit hitting the district, and honestly, most of that is due to STRS and PERS and the impact of those increases. Now, we have this two-year, so far, kind of, you know, helping us, you know, $1.3 million this year alone, right, with that drop. So I'm hoping that does not get dropped by the governor should some, you know, some other cuts happen, right, on June 15th. You know, if everyone is fully funded, is he going to put the STRS rates back up? You know, we'll see what happens, right? Realize too that our money that we pay out to the charter schools, so you'll see the charter school in lieu, they also get cut 10%. So that does actually help our budget in that we don't have to put out as much money, in that charter school payment. Again, it's a projection. I would rather us focus on this at 45-day revise, to be quite honest with you, as a board. Let's look at it then after the summer and really see what the budget is so that Julie and I can be much better about our projections and where we're at. But ultimately, Mandy, if you just go to the bottom line, so you kind of see the revenues, right? You'll see the SB 1090 funds are there. You know, for many years, they drop for the next couple of years as the money goes to the foundation as well. And then we get the full funding for, you know, for about 3 years, but then there's a drop of 4.6 million. So that is something that we're going to have to be cautious of as we move along. You'll see Julie for this year has, you know, in terms of looking at the budget, what we're not going to spend, you know, we're up to a surplus of about $2.5 million potentially at the end of this year at unaudited actuals, which brings our deficit to, or our reserves to $19 million, which is a great place. So though you're going to see that this year, it looks like we might have a $1.5 million deficit, it still doesn't make, you know, we have enough in surplus over the past 2 years to give us a year of doing all the things that the board wants to do moving forward. And then we can start to, over the course of this year, look at any adjustments we need to make, especially once we find out what the true property tax values are going to be in December. So, you know, even with the potential deficit next year, with the money we've saved this year, it should make up for it, you know, in terms of long term. You know, we still meet our reserve balances. We still are where we need to be, I think, as a school district. And adding those additional resources this year, like the MFT counseling services, like the extra funds for computers and hotspots and those things that I think are important for us to have in place in the fall, whether we're in school or we're virtual. If we go virtual, we will save money. And that those would be dollars that I would say the board could use if we needed to for other extra supports going into the fall. Because again, we don't pay overtime for employees. We don't have substitutes. We don't, you know, we'll have to talk about, you know, stipends and things. Are we going to pay stipends if we don't have athletics, or, you know, there's all those things that we're going to have to kind of discuss over the course of the next few months with our unions. But definitely, you know, money will be saved in those ways from a virtual platform. That said, I think, you know, our focus is on kids being back in school, right? And so the plan and the budget put forth, I think, puts a lot of resources in the hands of our staff to make sure that we are able to adjust and monitor when the fall comes around. And again, there are things we can cut in our budget if the board wants to do other, you know, wants to find other supports, or if all of a sudden in August the kids come back and, man, there's way more mental health needs than we needed to. I think, you know, your team with Kim and Rick and myself and Dr. Prater, we can find ways to move money around to make sure that we're meeting kids' needs. So, you know, that's something that we will definitely do. But I look forward to, you know, finding out the true numbers, bringing this budget to the board with the May revise, and spending some time with you then.
Thank you. At this time, I'll go to the public. Is there anyone from the public who wishes to address the board? I hear that there is no one. So, Mark, I saw your hand up.
Yep. So, Ryan, I'm hearing everything you're saying. I appreciate the discussion. I appreciate that I'm taking up so much time. But is there anything material? Is there any reason or anything that would affect the district if we were to delay adoption until we knew things like the June 15th number, the cost of the opening plans, which I don't think we didn't have opening plans, so I don't know how we could have budgeted for those. Is there anything that would be a problem if we accepted this as a preliminary and then went to a final vote at the end of the month?
So the next board meeting is June 16th, right? And we're not going to know then either. We have to adopt a budget by June, so to take to the county and move forward. So it's really, I mean, if it was really going to make a big difference and I really thought we would know everything by June 16th, then yeah, that would be fine. But honestly, I don't, from now until then, I don't see us really getting anything any different. By the time we have to post the agenda, which is the Friday before that board meeting, he won't even have come, you know, the governor's budget won't even be signed yet. So it's, I think we're still kind of in that same place. Julie would have loved to have a couple more weeks to spend on it, right? It's a lot of pressure on her in terms of putting all this forward in LCAP and everything else. And she does a fantastic job. along with the fiscal staff, right? So I feel really good about it. Again, we can make adjustments as needed. I have no doubt in doing that. But yet getting this approved tonight along with, there's another document that's coming up next that we do have to, get the board to approve the COVID, kind of LCAP plan that needs to happen right is super important. So I would recommend that the board approve the budget tonight, and we will come back to you and make, you know, any adjustments that the board sees that we need to make in August and September.
Kim, did you have remarks?
Brian mentioned it. I'm just required to do that CTE COVID-19 response at the same meeting as the budget.
Thank you. So a question I have is that I know that everything is extremely unpredictable. We don't know what's going to happen, all of that. But do you see us, if operating under an assumption that the governor's budget, the way it is now, will be very similar, and I don't know, but do you see us as having the ability to backfill any of those cuts that are being made, especially like the 50% to CTE, anything like that? Or is it just too early to tell? And if it's too early to know, that's okay. I know we're just operating and it's, you know, it's tied behind our backs right now.
You know, kudos again to Sally Ames, right, who already has a plan put together in terms of making adjustments, keeping things going. And Liz Moore with CTE and working with Kim, right, and plans. So we'll move forward on it. You know, we've been fortunate in that, like CTE, the extra funds and equipment purchases and things have been fantastic the last few years. So, I think we'll be able to, you know, kind of get through this time period and figure out where we stand with them and what their needs are, and work it out, right? Again, some of that, those funds too, we need to look at maintenance. You know, there's something on the agenda coming up, right, in terms of asphalt, but we have needs. So I would love to take some of these one-time dollars and do some projects, you know, the Loam's roofs, the Baywoods campus, you know, things like that that we need to continue to work on. So we will be looking at all of those needs throughout the district. But this current budget I don't think that there's much reduced in terms of what we've been used to and what we've had over the past few years.
Thank you. Anything else from the board? And if not, this is an action item. Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. If there's nothing more from the board, I really need to leave this meeting, and so I would like to move approval.
All right. So we have a motion to approve the budget by Mrs. Roger, and a second. Dr. Eisenbeth Rogers. Okay. Then we'll go through the vote. Mrs. Roger.
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Ms. Frey.
Yes.
Mr. Unger.
Yes.
Mr. Buckman.
Yes.
And me. All right. So this motion carries 5-0. Mrs. Roger.
Today's Bob's birthday, and I have to pull together a birthday dinner, a COVID dinner, and I thought I was going to have a lot more time, but I thought this might be over about an hour ago. So I got an hour and a half, and I got to get in the kitchen and start making things happen. I hope you'll understand. I did want to wait for the budget vote, so I am leaving.
Happy Goodbye. Birthday to Bob Roger.
Bye. Thank you. 71, but don't tell anybody.
Thank you. All right. Ms. Dawson, just to note for the record, Mrs. Roger has left us. All right. So next is item 11.04, our CDE COVID-19 written report.
Great, thank you. This is the CDE required written report, the narrative that I mentioned a while back that they asked that we send each district to send in this year to kind of discuss the ways that we responded to the COVID-19 crisis. So I know that you all read this prior. I just will point out a couple of things. First of all, we noted in here every single department. We can name ways in which they were flexible. They adjusted to the needs of students and families. You name a department, and they really stepped up. You know, I'll give you a quick example is LVNs that said, hey, do you need help with, you know, Family Resource Center with, you know, answering phones and a call center? You know, I mean, just people willing to step up and do whatever it takes. You think about IS&T that basically turned their entire model on its head in 2 days flat and created support systems for parents, for students, et cetera. I could go on and on, right? We've all heard about the amazing work food services did, our staff, paraprofessionals. I mean, I can't name it all. So I just want to make that point that this is one of those reports I was kind of proud to be a part of writing, and a lot of people contributed, but a lot of people stepped up in this time where they were willing to do whatever it takes, and I appreciate that attitude. The other thing I was going to say is that we started incredibly strong with having a focus on student engagement, with tracking that. We were hearing national and state reports about, you know, 20 and 30% engagement, and we were in the 90s. Now, no doubt that engagement gets tougher and tougher as the school year winds to a close. I think it probably happens in person too, probably made it all the more difficult in a distance learning model. But I would say that, you know, for a while, those engagement percentages were remarkably high. And we had, you know, tutors, et cetera, that were saying, look, I'm engaged with kids all over the country. And I help kids, you know, all over the state. And what you've created in a super short time was remarkable to see. So we have a lot to learn from it, too. And I know that we can continue to work on what were the best practices, what were the things we learned from it, how can we continue to improve it. And I know that Mr. Mayfield will work with ISLA and with teachers and others to gather input and ensure that the distance learning component is strong for our kids, for those that need it, and then we'll see where we are in August. So today I just ask for your approval of the COVID-19 operations written report.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public who would like to address this? No, thank you. Any questions from the board, Mr. Buckman?
No, I just wanted to move the item and just thank staff, but I'll wait and see if there's comments.
You know, Mark, I was just going to say something similar that, you know, reading this report gives us one more opportunity to really think about and be impressed by all that has gone on during this time. So thank you to everyone for that.
And my comments as well, and I'll move the motion.
Thank you. We have a motion. Is there a second? I'll second. Motion by Mr. Buckman, second by me. Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisenbeth Rogers? Ms. Frame, I think you're out there. Okay. Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Yes. And me, yes, so that motion carries with the absence of Mr. Millar and Mrs. Roger. Right. Next is 11.05, award of bid number 305, San Luis Coastal Unified Corporate Yard Paving Project.
Yeah, so we, you know, this is a maintenance-funded project, so it is not Measure D. In fact, the district office complex and the corporation yard are not in any of the Measure D language, and we have never spent you know, any money on these facilities out of Measure D. So what happens is we have a maintenance fund, an annual maintenance fund that you know, we put money into each year to do projects, which, you know, is very necessary and needed. We have some big projects now. This is one of them that really came to the top of the list. So when we sat down and looked at all of our maintenance items that we needed to get accomplished for next year, kind of where we were at. We had some money that the board had put aside in Fund 40 for maintenance 2 years ago, a couple million dollars that we've been using on roofing and, you know, a variety of projects over the past couple of years. But really this is kind of the project that we need to, now do. We over the course of the winter, we had put some, you know, kind of seal and fix some spots around it, but the whole thing is really just failing. And honestly, it's probably, you know, 5 to 10 years overdue in terms of when it should have been replaced and redone. So, you know, without the transportation happening right now, with the lack of transportation with summer school needs, that it's really just a good time for us to move forward with it. I will be presenting the board kind of an updated deferred maintenance plan in August. We'll have Mr. Simpson pull that together, all the things we've gotten accomplished this year, and it has been a lot. We've gotten a lot accomplished to share with the board. But tonight, we did go out for bid for this project. It's one of those, just, it's time. We have to do it. We have to move forward with it. So, what I'm asking the board to do tonight is to approve the total base bid and add alternate 1 and 2, not the entire alternate, add alternate 3 and 4. So that was, not written up correctly by staff. We really just want the board to approve, which is still the low bid, which is still Cal Portland. And so that amount of total base bid and add alternate 1 and 2, in talking with staff and looking at it, add alternates 3 and 4 are not necessary. So we are not going to ask the board to move forward with those. So that represents a total cost of $709,515. Again, still Cal Portland, the low bid. Kudos to Mr. Simpson, who reached out to these companies. And really, Cal Portland doesn't do a lot of work for the district, but he, you know, they had done a job recently, and so hey, reached out, tried to get more bids. Right, the more bids we can receive, the better number we can potentially get in terms of, you know, our costs and doing these projects. And so, sure enough, one of those companies, Cal Portland, did come in as our low bid. So, again, this will repave the entire transportation yard, all the way around. And if you want to drive out there and see for yourself what it currently looks like, I'd be glad to meet you out there and show you, but there are holes everywhere. It's like a battle zone. It's just a perfect time for us to move forward with this project.
Is there anyone from the public to address us on this item? No. And yeah, I think the last time I was out there, I could actually see grass coming up through areas of the asphalt, so it's not what you want. All right, any board discussion on this? And a motion, please.
So moved.
Thank you. And a second. Dr. Eisenbrath Rogers, thank you. So we'll go through the vote. Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisenbrath Rogers? Ms. Frame?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
And I will vote yes also. So it's a vote of 5-0 with Mr. Millar and Mrs. Roger absent.
Thank you.
11.06 is our Education Protection Act funds.
Hi, that's me again. Julie, you can't see me. so this is another one of those we bring every year. The board is required to approve the way we spend the education. Oh, now I'm going to have to start my video. So.
There we go.
Okay. That one.
He's real.
Damn.
Yeah.
Anyway, the board has approved the way we spend our Education Protection Act money, which ever since we've gotten it, we just have spent it on teacher salary and benefits, and specifically at Los Osos Middle School, only because the amount that they started with, that we started with, was almost exactly the same amount as the total salary and benefits of the Los Osos teachers. So we've just kept it there. It doesn't mean they're getting more money than any other school site. It's just that this is kind of helping us pay for teachers in the district. And you can see on the little spreadsheet that this year we're expecting to receive about $1,455,422. We have most of that budgeted in our teacher salary account. We have some budgeted in substitutes, which we didn't spend all of because we haven't had a lot of substitutes at the end of this year. We have the benefits and nothing in materials and supplies. And we had a little bit of carryover from last year. That's why the total expense is a little bit more than the total revenue. And as we discussed in the budget, we think we're going to have about $83,000 to carry over to next year. And once we know that we are definitely going to get funded again fully next year, then we'll move another teacher in here to use up that $83,000 in addition to the money that we get next year. And with that, I would be happy to take any questions.
Is there anyone from the public still with us who would like to address it? No. All right. Thank you. Any board discussion? A motion? Anything? This group is winding down. I will move acceptance of the Education Protection Act funds. And I'd like a second, please. Mr. Buckman, thank you. All right. There's a motion by me, a second by Mr. Buckman. Mr. Buckman. Yes. All right. Mr. Unger.
Yes.
Ms. Frame.
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Yes. And me. All right. Motion carries 5-0. We are moving on to our action consent agenda. Please let me know if you'd like any of these items pulled. 12.01, approval of warrants and payroll. Mr. Buckman?
Yes, please pull that for one quick question.
12.02, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 12.03, approval of purchase orders and CalCard purchases. And 12.04, disposal of surplus. So if we could have a motion on 12.02, 12.03 and 12.04.
I move approval of items 12.02, 12.03, and 12.04.
All right. And a second? Catherine, second? Mr. Buckman? I'm asking, we're going through this motion.
Yeah, I was going to second. Please, go ahead.
Okay. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers? Yes. Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Ms. Frame?
Yes.
And me, yes. All right. Thank you. And then, Mark, you had wanted to pull 12.01?
Yeah, just a real quick question. There's a lot of the U.S. Bank, looks like the credit card stuff, the CalCards. Is there a max on the CalCards? One of these, it just caught my attention. One of them is the $13,000 charge to a CalCard. Do we have a limit on what people can use these for? How much?
Yes. Yes, there are limits on everybody's CalCards. There's per item limits and there's per month limits. And it's also limited to certain things, like you can't go to a liquor store. So that's good. In certain circumstances, if something needs to be ordered that's over the limit, we can release that limit temporarily and to allow the order, but they have to have pre-approval. It has to have gone through the approval process before we'll do that.
Okay, thanks. Mm-hmm. I'd like to make a motion to approve 12.01.
Thank you. Mr. Unger, seconds? Okay, thank you. So we have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Mr. Unger. Mr. Buckman, I'm assuming you will vote yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry, yes, sorry.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Ms. Frey?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers? Yes. And I will vote yes as well. So motion carries 5-0. All right. Next is our advance agenda. Anyone with topics for advance agenda? Reports by board members. Mr. Unger?
Yeah, just really quickly, last Wednesday, my wife and I and a friend of ours, a retired teacher, were taking a walk through her neighborhood, which is includes San Luis Obispo High School. And so we were walking around the high school, socially distanced, of course. And I wanted to show them the new administration building. So we went down there. San Luis High was, they were doing registrations there. Mr. O'Connor saw us. He took us around. I just want to say what a beautiful building that is, and what an amazing performance space they're going to get there. Measure D has done phenomenal things for that school and for all of our schools. And I just want to thank the community and thank Mr. O'Connor for taking us around.
Anyone else? All right. Well, this concludes our meeting. We will adjourn this regular board meeting. Thank you, one and all. Take care. Stay safe.
The recording has stopped.
Oh, gosh. I'm tired. Let me make sure this thing.